AIM with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, October 26, 2004. We're so pleased to be with all of you, AI Fall Fun Drive. Today, we have very special programming. Many of you may remember the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. Those of you who didn't have the opportunity to acquire this with your WBAI contribution, now is the moment. Today is our only day participating in the WBAI Fund Drive, so get to the phones right away, 212-209-2950. We're going to play big excerpts from The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End of the Palestinian People. For your contribution of $100, this two-CD set will be available to you. It includes presentations by Ralph, presentation by me, and an extensive question and answer period. We also have available 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11. Very important two CD, two-hour Taking AIM programs. We made these particularly available for the WBAI Fund Drives because of your expressed interest for these programs. That, too, is yours for a $100 contribution. Now, we also decided that this was a good time for literary contributions. We have a few editions of the first edition of The Hidden History of Zionism, cloth-bound quality book editions, and we're going to make those available with a signed inscription from Ralph for your $150 contribution to WBAI. We also have a special pamphlet, a new pamphlet, and that is on the World Trade Center. It includes three articles: Who Bombed the U.S. World Trade Center 1993, The Growing Evidence Points to the Role of the FBI Operative, and that was written by Ralph at the time. It also has, for the first time, the transcript of 9/11 false flag operation that was broadcast originally on WBAI September 10th, 2002, which we broadcast recently and had overwhelming response from you. So we've decided to make the transcript available in this new pamphlet. And lastly, the third article, Permanent War, The Stakes for Working People, something that we all recognize as we move towards the elections. This 50-page pamphlet is yours for your contribution to WBAI for $60. Remember, 212-209-2950. And as an added treat today, Ralph, later on in the program, will be discussing the Million Worker March. As you know, he was one of the key organizers of this effort, and all of that work ties in with what we do on Taking AIM, organizing for change. Now, let's go first to the CD, but I want you to remember, you can call while we're playing this important excerpt, and the number to call is 212-209-2950. We're going to play about a half hour. So remember, keep the phones ringing, and we'll be back to discuss not only the hidden history of Zionism, the current situation in Palestine today, but also the events of 212-209-2950. Ralph, I've occupied all the airspace here.
Well, Maya, if you look today at the New York Times, Paul Krugman's article, It attempts to address the fact that the Bush administration had concealed the missing explosive arsenal about which the Kerry people are seeking to flank Bush from the right, that he's not tough enough on terror. But what emerges from the Krugman piece that's particularly interesting is that Zarqawi, who has been demonized as an orchestrator of terror attacks in Iraq, had in fact been under surveillance and under control by the United States authorities for a substantial period of time. And at the conclusion of Paul Krugman's piece, he says, we need to ask the question, what was known to the administration and Congress about 9/11 prior to its occurrence? This is directly linked to the adventurism of the Israeli state, about which hidden history of Zionism is a essential illuminator and an explicator of the ideological roots of the Zionist movement in the state of Israel. It bears upon the need to understand that there is a ruling class in this country that has a strategic consensus about what is to be done, targeting Iran, targeting Syria, invoking the false category of terror. In fact, terrorizing the American people with the prospect of demonic others, while in fact the authors of this violence and the authors of this militarism and the authors of this class war are the 1% of our people that controls 95% of the national wealth.
We begin now with the hidden history of Zionism.
From the Madrid Conference in 1991 to Oslo. Many of you Oslo Accords, but there have been many more accords since 1991 with Madrid. Gaza, Jericho, Camp David, the Saudi plan, and now with the roadmap. The game, however, has always been the same. The liquidation of the century-old Palestinian struggle for self-determination. The unspeakable suffering and subjugation of the Palestinian people that we witness unfolding today in the West Bank and Gaza. This suffering and subjugation are but the little continuation of how all of Palestine was colonized. It is a shocking history of armed displacement, massacre, and expulsion that dates back to the 19th century. Tonight, Ralph is going to elucidate on the hidden history of Zionism, and then I'll discuss the roadmap and what is unfolding in the West Bank.
Thank you, Maya. Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks, Lori. And thanks to all of you, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, for coming here for a discussion of an issue that has consumed people and yet suffers from the absence of real concrete data and information pertaining to the nature of Zionism, its origins, its character ideologically, its role historically, and precisely the political process through which Zionism has assumed hegemony in the Middle East and to no small extent over the centers of imperial policy itself, notably since the events of 9/11. There have been four prevalent myths that have characterized our understanding of the nature of Zionism and of the Israeli state that is based, in, particularly in the United States and in Western Europe. The first myth pertains to the claim of a land without a people for a people without a land. The second myth is that of Israeli democracy. Virtually every newspaper and every television story and every reference to the Israeli state is prefaced by the claim that it is the only real democracy in the Middle East and so on. The third myth pertains to security as the motive force of Israeli foreign policy. Here you have a predatory a colonial settler operation which has sought to destabilize each Arab nation in the region and to entrap it and ensnare it in conflict, the better to usurp more territory, presenting itself in a defensive posture. And perhaps the fourth and most prevalent myth has been that of Zionism as the moral legatee of the victims of the Holocaust. And what is particularly savage in the irony that surrounds this claim is the fact that the Zionist movement and the Zionist leaders itself were the active collaborators with the perpetrators of the Holocaust. They participated in the suppression of Jewish resistance, and they organized a consistent opposition to any escape on the part of European Jewry. The objective of Zionism has never merely been to colonize Palestine in the manner in which the colonial powers colonized Africa and Asia and, yes, Latin America. In the latter instance, the objective was to obtain resources and cheap labor in the process of imposing a colonial and imperial hegemony. But what distinguishes Zionism from other colonial movements is the relationship between the settlers and the people, because the avowed purpose of the Zionist movement was not merely to exploit the Palestinian people, but to disperse and to dispossess them. The intent was to replace the indigenous population with a new settler community, to eradicate the farmers, the artisans, and the town dwellers of Palestine, and to substitute a workforce composed of a settler population. And in denying the existence of the Palestinian people, the Zionist movement sought to create the political conditions for their removal, not merely from their land, but from history. When acknowledged at all, the Palestinians have been reinvented as a semi-savage nomadic remnant. Historic records have been falsified, a procedure that began during the last quarter of the 19th century, but continues to this very day. The Zionist movement would seek, throughout its inception, alternative imperial sponsors for this bloody enterprise. In fact, if you look carefully at the progenitors of Zionism, the upper layers of the haute bourgeoisie in Europe, their basic approach was to treat anti-Semitism as something not only endemic and inevitable, but also of considerable value. They despaired of any alternative to the anti-Semitic climate of the imperial regimes in which they subsisted. And they advocated making common cause with the anti-Semites for the purpose of converting the Jews of Europe into settlers afar. Herzl approached the most anti-Semitic and retrograde regimes of the day. They approached Count von Plehve of the Tsar, the author of the great pogrom at Kishinev and of the Black Hundreds. And they approached them with the proposition that if they funded and armed a Zionist movement to colonize Palestine, the Zionist movement would undertake that first imperialism representing its commercial interests in the area. And the same pitch was made to the Kaiser, who for over a decade armed and supported and dallied with the Zionist movement. The same approach made to the French Imperium and, of course, to the British Raj. So from its inception, Zionism has seen as its task enlisting the imperial powers, and indeed the most retrograde and anti-Semitic of them, as the fundamental political economic sponsors of the colonial enterprise itself. And this project embraced as well the fascism of Mussolini. It was Mussolini who funded the Zionist youth movement, particularly Beitar, whose leader was Menachem Begin, who wore the black shirt and gave the fascist salute, which they changed to the brown shirt with the advent of Hitler and Nazism in Europe. And the Zionist movement did not miss a beat with the advent of Nazism in Europe. On the contrary, the local Zionist organization of Germany expressed its open support for the Nazi Party and enlisted the Nazi Party as its sponsors. And the labor Zionists would bring Eichmann to Palestine in the 1930s, Baron von Mildenstein of the SS for a period of 6 months, leading to a 12-part series in the publication of the SS called Der Angriff, which means the assault, praising Zionism, with Heydrich and Himmler overseeing the stamping of a coin with the swastika on one side and the Star of David on the other, culminating indeed in the moment when the Zionist movement of Shamir made a formal military pact with the Wehrmacht, discovered in the German embassy in Ankara at the end of the Second World War and known as the Ankara Document. So an understandable and ideological character of Zionism, both in relation to its victim people, the Palestinians, but notably in relation to the Jews themselves, we then come to comprehend the cruel irony of the ways in which the Zionist movement has wrapped itself in the collective shroud of the 6 million victims of the Holocaust, the better to visit upon itself a moral authority to impose on the Palestinian people a fate rather like that of the Jews in Europe. From its inception, every major spokesperson for the Zionist movement has set forth clearly what was intended in Palestine. It was nothing less than the systematic removal of the Palestinian people, their dispossession, and their elimination. In 1896, Theodor Herzl set forth his plan for inducing the Ottoman Empire to grant Palestine to the Zionist settler movement. If His Majesty the Sultan were to give us Palestine, we will undertake to regulate the finances of Turkey and form an outpost of civilization in opposition to barbarism, defending Turkish imperial and commercial interests in the region. Speaking at this Congress of the World Zionist Organization in 1905, the Seventh World Zionist Congress, Max Nordau, a prominent Zionist leader, put forth before the Zionists themselves their concerns. There is a movement which has taken hold of a great part of the Arab people. It is taking a direction which will cause harm in Palestine. The Turkish government will feel itself compelled to defend its reign in Palestine and Syria with armed force. In these circumstances, we can persuade Turkey that they will require us to carry out their particular operations, a strong, well-organized, relentless military group which will suppress this population and eliminate it. The South Africa is a very old one. It does not merely encompass Prime Minister General Jan Smuts, who is a South African delegate to the British War Cabinet, pushed the British government to adopt the Balfour Declaration, making a commitment to construct a Zionist colony under British direction. The relationship between Zionism and the South African settlers had evolved much earlier, because the settlers played a similar role in South Africa as they would in Palestine. N. Kirshner, the chairman of the South African Zionist Federation, provided a vivid account of the intimate interaction between the Zionists and South African leaders, the identification of Zionists like Weizmann and Herzl with the South African conception of a racially distinct colonizing population. As to Theodor Herzl, the founder of political Zionism, he expressed his fundamental commitment in his modeling of the Zionist program on that quintessential colonial ideologue, Sir Cecil Rhodes. As Herzl wrote about Rhodes, "There are differences between Cecil Rhodes and my humble self, all to my disfavor, to my very great personal disfavor. The objective ones are in favor of our Zionist movement. We will only accomplish the Zionist dispersal of the Palestinians by using the methods pioneered by Rhodes. The Jewish company will be modeled on the colonial chartered company of Rhodes, and it will be a great acquisition company that will carry out its task through military and commercial means. The poorest will first go to cultivate the soil. In accordance with a preconceived land plan, they will construct roads and bridges and railways and telegraphs and regulate rivers and build their own habitations and drive the indigenous population out." One of the ideological forebears of Zionism, Vladimir Jabotinsky, is known as the founder of revisionist Zionism, that Zionist current which had little patience facade employed by labor Zionists. In 1923, Jabotinsky wrote The Iron Wall, which is a benchmark essay for the entire Zionist movement, in which he sets forth bluntly and clearly the premises of Zionism. They had indeed been laid out in the diaries of Theodor Herzl and in the political writings of Chaim Weizmann, if not as eloquently as the declaration of Jabotinsky, known as the Iron Wall. "There can be no discussion of reconciliation between us and Palestinian Arabs, not now, not in the future. All well-meaning people, with the exception of those blind from birth, have understood long ago the complete and utter impossibility at arriving at agreements with the Arabs of Palestine for the transformation of Palestine from Arab country to a country under utter control of Jews. Each of you has some general understanding of the history of colonization. Try to find even one example when the colonization of a country takes place with the agreement of the native population. Such an event has never occurred. The natives will always struggle obstinately against colonists, and it is all the same whether they are cultured or uncultured. The comrades in arms of Hernan Cortes and Francisco Pizarro conducted themselves like brigands. The Redskins fought with uncompromising fervor, against both evil and so-called good-hearted colonizers. The natives will struggle against any form, any kind of colonization, anywhere and at any time, because it is inadmissible to them. Any native people views their country as their national home, of which they will be masters, and they will never voluntarily allow a new master who drives them out. So it is for the Arabs. Compromisers among the Palestinians are some kind of fools who can be tricked with hidden formulations of our basic goals. I flatly refuse to accede to this view of the Palestinian Arabs. They have the precise psychology that any oppressed people has. They look upon Palestine with the same instinctive love and true fervor that any Aztec look upon his Mexico or any Sioux upon his prairie. This people will struggle against colonizers until the last spark of hope that they can avoid the dangers of conquest and colonization is extinguished. Yes, the Palestinians will struggle in this way until we have removed the last spark of hope. It matters not what words we use to explain our colonization. Colonization has an integral, inescapable meaning. It is understood by every Jew and by every Arab. We have but one goal. It is in the nature of things. We shall carry on this colonization against the will of the Palestinian Arabs. That condition exists now. It will subsist in the future, and we will never relinquish it. And even an agreement with non-Palestinians represents the same kind of fantasy. For in order for genuine Arab nationalists of Baghdad and Mecca and Damascus to agree to pay so serious a price, they would have to abandon the Arab character of Palestine. For we shall not give compensation for Palestine neither to Palestinians or to other Arabs. A voluntary agreement is inconceivable. Let us be clear about that. Even the most restricted colonization would only be possible in defiance of the will of the native populace. Ours will continue to develop only under a shield of force, which comprises an iron wall through which this people will never break through. This is our Arab policy. To formulate it any other way is hypocrisy, whether through the Balfour Declaration or the mandate, the necessity for establishing in this country conditions of rule through which this people, regardless of its wishes, will be deprived of all possible physical and administrative means of impeding us. Force, relentless force, will play its role without indulgence. And in this, let us be clear, there is no meaningful difference between our militarists and our vegetarians. One prefers an iron wall of Jewish bayonets, the other an iron wall of English bayonets. And to the hackneyed reproach that this point of view is unethical, we say untrue. This is our ethic. There is no other ethic. As long as there remains the faintest spark of hope for Palestinians to impede us, they will not sell these hopes, not for any sweet words nor for any tasty moral. Because this is not a rabble, but a people, a living people. And no people makes such enormous concessions on such fateful questions of existence, except when there is no hope left, until we have removed any remnant, every opening visible in the iron wall. The theme and imagery of coercive iron and steel evoked by Vladimir Jabotinsky was to be taken up by the nascent National Socialist Movement in Germany, even as Jabotinsky had in turn been inspired by Benito Mussolini. The mystical invocation of iron will in the service of martial and chauvinist conquest united Zionist, colonial, and fascist ideologies, and it sought its legitimacy in legends of a conquering past. Cecil B. DeMille's Samson and Delilah was more than a Hollywood biblical romance about the perfidy of woman and the virtue of manly strength. It carried as well the authoritarian from which it was adopted, Vladimir Jabotinsky's Samson, which trumpeted the necessity of brute force of the Israelites who were to conquer the Philistines. "Shall I give our people a message from you?" Samson thought for a while and then said slowly, "The first word is iron. They must get iron. They must give everything they have for iron. Their silver, their wheat, their oil, their wine, their flocks, their wives, their daughters, all for iron. Nothing in the world more valuable than iron." Jabotinsky, the siren of an iron wall through which this local population would never break through, and of the iron law of every colonizing movement, found his call echoed by every major Zionist spokesperson and utilized in every major Zionist foray against this victim people for decades to come. Israel's Minister of Defense Yitzhak Rabin, in 1967 as Chief of Staff, launched a war of elimination with what he called iron will. As Prime Minister in 1975 and 1976, he declared the policy of Hayat Barzel, the Iron Hand, in the West Bank. Over 300,000 Palestinians were to pass through Israeli prisons under conditions of sustained and institutionalized torture, exposed by the Sunday Times of London, denounced by Amnesty International. It became the subject of a book of Myers and mine called Prisoners of Israel after we had prepared a report at the request of the United Nations on the treatment of Palestinian prisoners in three jurisdictions. His successor as Chief of Staff, Rafael Eitan, imposed the Iron Arm, Zroa Barzel, on the West Bank, and sustained assassination was added to the repressive arsenal. On July 17, 1982, the Israeli cabinet met to prepare what the Sunday Times in London termed this carefully pre-planned military operation to purge the camps, or Iron Brain. The camps were Sabra and Shatila, and the operation, familiar to Sharon and Begin, was part of Sharon's larger plan discussed in detail in the Israeli cabinet. The colonization of Palestine has proceeded on this basis. The colonization of Palestine has been punctuated by periodic massacre from one end of that country to the other. It is the means through which Palestine was emptied of its population. Now, we should bear in mind that in 1947, there were now 600,000 settlers and 1.4 million Palestinian Arabs. At the time of the partitioning of Palestine over the heads of the Palestinian people in 1947, the settler population were 27% of the populace. The United Nations heard before the Select Committee on Palestine the testimony of Rabbi Fishman on behalf of the Jewish Agency. And Rabbi Fishman presented a map based upon the diaries of Theodor Herzl, page 711 of volume 2 of the Complete Diaries of Theodor Herzl, which declared that the area of Eretz Israel of the Jewish state stretched from the Brook of Egypt to the Euphrates. And that map, which was presented to the United Nations as to what constituted Eretz Israel, included all of Palestine, all of Transjordan, Egypt up to the Nile, including Cairo, one-third of Arabia, two-thirds of Syria, 40% of Iraq, and the southern tier of Turkey, right, indeed, extending up to and encompassing Kuwait. Eretz Israel, 1947, formally presented on behalf of the Jewish Agency for Palestine before the United Nations Special Committee on Inquiry on July 9, 1947. They awarded the Zionist movement 55% of the most fertile land. Within days, and indeed weeks, the process of eliminating the population of Palestine was unfolding. The Judaizing of the land, the seizure of the land. And I think it's essential that we also bear in mind that all of the major spokespersons of the Zionist movement had proclaimed this as their essential objective. In 1940, Joseph Weitz, the head of the Jewish Agency's colonization department under David Ben-Gurion, responsible for the organization of settlement in Palestine, wrote, "Between ourselves, let us be clear, there is no room for Palestinians in this country. We shall not achieve our objective if they are allowed to remain. There will be no other way. We will transfer them, all of them, not one village, not one tribe, not one clan shall be left." As for Ben-Gurion and the labor Zionists, in a speech to the Zionist meeting on October 13, 1936, Ben-Gurion said, "We do not suggest that we have renounced our ultimate aim, which is far-reaching, far more than the revisionists who oppose partition. The final vision, an organic, spiritual, ideological component of my Zionist aspirations, is clear. It is the elimination of the Palestinian population. And in the same year, Ben-Gurion, in a letter to his son, "A partial Jewish state is not the end, it is only the beginning. We cannot be prevented from settling in all parts of that region." In 1937, "The boundaries of Zionist aspiration are the concern of the Jews alone, and no external factor will limit us." By 1938, Ben-Gurion is explicit. "The boundaries of Zionist aspiration, Council of Poel Zion and Zion in Tel Aviv, include, in the first instance, southern Lebanon, southern Syria, today's Jordan, all of Cisjordan, and the Sinai." He formulated, did Ben-Gurion, Zionist strategy very clearly. "When we've become the dominant force as the result of the creation of the state, we shall abolish this partition and expand to the whole of Palestine, and that is but a stage in the realization of Zionism. Its task is to prepare the ground now for our expansion. This state will preserve its order not by preaching, but with machine guns." By May of 1948, here's Ben-Gurion to the General Staff. "Prepare to go over to the defensive. Smash Lebanon, Transjordan, and Syria. The weak point is Lebanon. This regime is artificial. It will be easy for us to undermine it. We shall establish a puppet Christian state there, and then we shall smash the Arab legions, eliminate Transjordan. Syria will fall to us. We then bomb and move on. We take Port Said, Alexandria, and the Sinai." And when General Yigal Alon asked Ben-Gurion, "Well, what do we do with the population of Lida and Ramla, 50,000 inhabitants?" Ben-Gurion, as his biographer describes, waved his hand and said, "You know what to do. Drive them out." Every major spokesperson, there is nothing obscure, concealed, or unstated about the Zionist record of liquidation. The Koenig Report: "We will use terror, assassination, intimidation, land confiscation, the cutting of all social services to rid the Galilee of its Arab populace." Chairman Heilbrun of the Committee for the Re-election of General Shlomo Lahat, the mayor of Tel Aviv: "We shall kill all the Palestinians to live here as slaves." And here are the words of Yuri Lubrani, David Ben-Gurion's special advisor in Arab affairs in 1960. "We shall reduce the Palestinian population to a community of woodcutters and waiters." And Raphael Eitan, the chief of staff of Israel's armed forces: "We declare openly, the Palestinian Arabs have no right to settle on even one centimeter of Eretz Israel. You good souls should know that the gas chambers of Adolf Hitler will be as a recreational palace. Force is all they do or ever will understand, and we shall use the ultimate force until the Palestinians come crawling to us on all fours." Eitan elaborated before the Knesset's Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee a formal declaration: "When we have settled this land, all the Arabs will be able to do is scurry around like drugged roaches in a bottle." Well, then, how did they go about it, and what did they do? The process, as I said, was one of sustained slaughter. Village after village was wiped out. The killing was intended to cause people to flee for their lives. The commander of the Haganah, Zvi Ankori, described it in detail. "We oversaw cut-off genitalia, women's crushed stomachs. It was direct murder." And Malcolm Begin would gloat over the impact throughout Palestine of the Nazi-like operations that he commanded at Deir Yassin. "A legend of terror spread amongst Arabs who were seized with panic at the mere mention of our soldiers. It was worth dozens of battalions to our forces. Palestinians throughout the country were seized with limitless panic and fled for their lives. This mass flight developed into a maddened, uncontrollable stampede. Of the 800 on the present territory of Israel, only 165,000 are still there. The political and economic significance of this achievement can hardly be overestimated."
You've been listening to an excerpt from Ralph Schoenman's presentation of The Hidden History of Zionism. It is the first CD in a two CD set that includes presentation by Ralph of The Hidden History of Zionism, a presentation by me, Maya Schoen, on the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people, and an extensive discussion with the audience at this important presentation. It is yours for your gift, as a gift to you, for your contribution to sustain WBAI and Taking Aim, a program that we bring to you weekly. Your contribution of $100 is two CD set. We want to thank all of you who've been calling already during this excerpt, and we closed the phones so that you could hear the, toned down the phones during the presentation so that you could hear the presentation clearly. Now is the moment to get to your phone and keep all the lines that the volunteers are handling in the pledge room. Keep them busy. 212-209-2950. In addition to the Hidden History of Zionism 2 CD set for $100, we're making available as our gift to you, for your contribution of $150, a signed edition of the cloth edition, the beautifully bound cloth edition of the book, The Hidden History of Zionism. We also have available today two 9/11 programs. One, the 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11, and a new 9/11 pamphlet for $150. For those of you who are able to afford it, the total package for Taking Aim is $410. We're asking you for a contribution of $500 to sustain WBAI in this important moment in history. What would it be like if WBAI weren't on the air and if we couldn't be bringing you Taking Aim every week? So for $60, the 9/11 pamphlet, which we'll discuss later in the show, $100, 9/11 and the Capitalist State or the Smoking and the Smoking Guns of 9/11, and what you've been hearing for the past half hour, $100 for your contribution to the Hidden History of Zionism 2 CD set, and for the full book, which goes into so much more than was on the CDs, and that's for a signed edition of the Hidden History of Zionism cloth-bound edition, $150. Ralph?
When we discuss the nature of Zionism as a colonial operation, what I think is essential for all of us to understand, brothers and sisters, is that the colonial construct of the Israeli state in Palestine, from its inception, was seen as a cat's paw or a special force operation of American imperialism itself. $100 billion has been given to the Israeli state by United States authorities in the past half century. It averages to more than $30,000 per individual. And that's only the tip of the iceberg, because the $100 billion in outright grants and outright subsidization does not include the placement of funds of the major trade unions, for example, or state budgets like the California state budget. They in Israeli banks at minimal rates of interest, in effect a de facto subsidizing of the Israeli state. It's well described by Joseph Harsh in the Christian Science Monitor. This is back in August 5th, 1982. Few countries in history, Joseph Harsh wrote, have been as dependent on another as Israel on the United States. All of Israel's major weapons are from the United States as gifts or on long-term low-interest loans which few seriously expect to be repaid. Israel is underwritten and wholly subsidized from Washington. Without American arms, without American direction, Israel would lose its quantitative and qualitative military superiority, which the United States has promised to sustain and maintain. Without its economic subsidy, Israel's credit vanishes, and its constructed economy would vanish. In other words, Israel does what Washington allows it to do. It dare not conduct a single military operation without the consent of Washington, and when it undertakes a military offensive, the world assumes correctly that it is under Washington's direction, unquote, Christian Science Monitor, Joseph Harsh.
And, Ralph, that is written in The Hidden History of Zionism. We don't hear the phones right now. I hope they're ringing. So, Michael, if you can turn on the phones again, we would like to hear from you. 212-209-2950. We're here in California. We broadcast to you each week from the KPFA studios. It goes by ISDN line to the WBAI studios. Now, remember, Taking Aim is unique to New York. WBAI took the chance, allowed us the opportunity to be with you. We are not, except around the world. New York and the New York region, the incredible broad reach of WBAI is special home for Ralph and me and Taking Aim. And that's why it means so much to us to have the opportunity to participate in the fund drive. Ralph?
You know, I wanted to mention, Maya, that the relationship between the Israeli state and the events of 9/11 is a very direct one, as we have set forth in the pamphlet that you're describing, as well as in the Hidden History of Zionism, because the category of terror was essentially an Israeli construct in conjunction with U.S. authorities. When the Israeli state was confronting the necessity to provide a justification for the fragmentation of each Arab state in its turn, an important Mossad memorandum and document was published called, the author being Oded Yinon, calling the Strategy for the 1980s.
Strategy for Israel in the 1980s.
That called for the fragmentation of each Middle Eastern country in its turn. And that was a document which would come to be adopted by what are called the neocons in the American Enterprise Institute. And it served as well for a project that the Central Intelligence Agency undertook with the Mossad to arrive at a consensus between all the imperial and capitalist states for a war on terror. And the point, man, interestingly enough, for this project was, as we document in, this, in the pamphlet and in the broadcasts that we've done, Benjamin Netanyahu. The Israeli publication Ha'ir and the author Nevi Gordon had established, and Haaretz had published, that Netanyahu had, in fact, four cover names, numbers. He was operating under the name of John L. Sullivan and John L. Sullivan Jr., as well as Netai Netanyahu and Benjamin Netanyahu. And in that capacity, he was being sent by the Council on Foreign Relations to various locations to establish conferences on the necessity for a, quote, war on terror. One of the initial ones of conferences occurred in Tel Aviv with George Shultz and George Bush Sr., James Baker, various National Security Council people, as well as Netanyahu. This would be replicated later in Washington. And it served as the background towards looking for demons to be fingered as a rationale for long-standing plans to seize Arab oil directly, long-standing plans to fragment each Arab country in its turn. Interestingly enough, the primary target was set forth as Iraq. We again, document this in the Hidden History of Zionism.
Well, Ralph, I don't want people to become absorbed with listening to your exposition here. I want you all to go to the phone, 212-209-2950. It's been 3 years now since we've offered the signed edition of the Hidden History of Zionism for you. There are not many signed editions out there. We want you to have one. Be that special WBAI listener with a signed edition of The Hidden History of Zionism, your $150 contribution. The Hidden History of Zionism is a classic work, and not only you, but your friends, your families, and your colleagues need a piece like this, a synopsis that can help them understand what is going on. What is this move by Ariel Sharon going to eliminate the Israeli presence from Gaza, and at the same time he levels 80 homes and is forever killing one person after another, and as well intensifying the Israeli occupation of the West Bank? what does this mean? You will understand this when you read The Hidden History of Zionism, as Rabbi Elmer Berger, one of the most significant anti-Zionist Jews, unfortunately now deceased, had said when he read The Hidden History of Zionism. Ralph Schoenman has done a remarkable job compressing an encyclopedia of information. It will be difficult to rival his profound and provocative analysis of the root causes of the continuing problem of Palestine and the dispossessed Palestinian people. In fact, what Rabbi Elmer Berger wrote when he first read The Hidden History of Zionism has remained true to this day. The Hidden History of Zionism is the classic work. There are many, many books that go into a great deal of detail and upon which we drew for The Hidden History of Zionism. As well, The Hidden History of Zionism contains the original research that Ralph and I did about the prevalence of torture and the destruction of the Palestinian existence in the attempt to destroy the Palestinian existence in Lebanon, the move to wipe the Palestinians off the face of the earth in the 1982 invasion of Lebanon and also the subsequent 10-year occupation of Lebanon.
You know, there are 6,000 settlers in Gaza. But since the 1950s, it's literally now a half century, and it's ironic that it should be Ariel Sharon who has been the primary figure in this. His whole career has been centered around people.
Especially in Gaza, Ralph, where he brought in the bulldozers and they created what were called the Sharon Boulevards, wiping out entire parts of the refugee camps.
In The Hidden History of Zionism, I document from Meyer Hartzion's diary, massacres in the refugee camps and villages of Gaza that Ariel Sharon oversaw from the early 1950s. Quote, the wide, dry riverbed glitters in the moonlight. Our units advance carefully and in secret along the mountain slopes. The houses can now be seen. In the distance, we see lights and hear the sounds of Arab music coming out of homes immersed in darkness. We split into three units. Our groups make their way to the immense refugee camp Al-Burja to the south. The other group marches to the homes in the area of Wadi Gaza. We march, trampling over green fields, wading through water canals as the moon bathes our units in the scintillating light. Soon, however, the silence is shattered by our bullets and explosions and the screams of those who were sleeping peacefully. We advance quickly and enter the houses, Man Hatha, Arabic for who's there. We leap towards the voices. Fearing and trembling, Arabs are standing up the walls of their buildings and seeking to escape. I open fire. My comrades do the same. Ear-piercing screams fill the air. People fall to the ground. Others continue to run. Now we act. We have no time to lose. We make our way from house to house as Palestinians scramble in confusion. Our machine guns rattle. Their noise mixed with a terrible howling. We reach the main thoroughfares of the camp. The mobs of fleeing Palestinians grow larger. Our other units attack from the opposite direction. The thunder of our hand grenades echo in the distance. The attack is unleashed. That massacre would prelude a subsequent massacre in Kfar Qasim, which was of like kind, Karen's unit, Commando Unit 101. It was a half century ago. It has never stopped. It continues to this moment. The destruction and massacre of the Palestinian people, the leveling of their camps, the targeting of their leaders, the destruction of their homes, the conditions in which there's 70 and 80% unemployment, the conditions in which there's mass hunger amongst the children of Palestine, notably in Gaza, the putative withdrawal is but the prelude to a scorched earth policy intended to disperse, intended to remove the Palestinian population of Gaza.
And Ralph, as the Hannibal Lecter of journalism, Thomas Friedman, wrote many years ago, as his proposed solution for the Palestinian people, it was to create an armed prison camp, a virtual concentration camp, and that is essentially what is the Sharon plan for Gaza, with a fortification of Gaza where there is no ability to work except in possible sweatshops, and the industry must then move through Israel, will be controlled by Israel and move through Israel, and most of the people in Gaza actually work within the pre-67 borders of Israel, and they would have to then file and have identity checks and so on. So it would be full control, a virtual slave labor situation for the Gaza population. Now, Ralph had been reading from an excerpt of The Hidden History of Zionism that is not on the CD lecture. $150, your gift to WBAI. It's really not a gift. It's our gift to you for your sustaining your radio station. A signed edition of The Hidden History of Zionism, the cloth version. The CD at the lecture is $100. Keep those phones ringing. So many of you have been calling. We want to thank you, and we will get a chance to thank some of you on air. Right now, I'd like to thank Michael G. Haskins, our engineer at WBAI, Michael Yoshida, who each week sets us up at KPFA, Spider, and Kathy Davis, who makes sure that the recordings that we send to you are of the highest quality, and Kathy also has done a really tremendous job as the public affairs director for WBAI. Bernard White, the program director, who has supported us and really pushed from keeping Taking Aim coming to you regularly, and Don Rojas, who's been an advocate of the work that Ralph and I do, and also of real community-based radio for countless years. Again, Mark Bilt, Pamela Summers, who maintain the Taking Aim website, www.takingaim.info. Without Mark and Pamela, there wouldn't be this free archive of our programs that available to people throughout the world. We want to thank all of them, and also Bonnie Faulkner, who works with us, her program Guns and Butter at APFA. She replays many of our Taking Aim programs, and together we have built the Center for Independent Communication. So many people, and among them the listeners who write to us each week, who direct programs, who respond to what we do on air and keep us informed of how we are reaching you. Now is the moment for every one of you out there to join with us to sustain WBAI. This station is a gem. Many people don't recognize what it has been over the years and what it can become, and it can only do this with your contributions, all of our contributions, 212-2090. Once again, I'm going to repeat the two CD set, that's The Hidden History of Zionism and The Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. It's $100. For $150, the signed edition of The Hidden History of Zionism, signed by Ralph, although it is a collaborative effort. And the $250, you have both of those, and what a great gift that'll make. $100, 9/11 in the capital state and the smoking guns of 9/11, and I assure you that you will have all these premiums before the holidays. I've been slow, not WBAI has been slow in getting these premiums out to you, and you will have them very, very soon. And, of course, our new pamphlet. No one has ever seen this pamphlet because it has been offered for the first time here at WBAI for this particular fund drive, and that's our new 9/11 pamphlet with three important articles. For the first time, the transcript of 9/11 false flag operation. Again, the permanent war, the stakes for working people, covering the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, and particularly the role of the FBI in that.
And the Mossad,
yes. And permanent war, the stakes for working people, what it all means today. Please call 212-209-2950. We're coming up on the hour, and we want to welcome all of you. Ralph?
Maya, Fox News carried a four-part series documenting Mossad operations in the United States involving 200 agents. 60 were based in the environs of Hollywood, Florida, and had penetrated the group of Mohammed Atta. One group of Mossad operatives was based a few houses down from Mohammed Atta's residence on the same street. ABC's 2020 Digo, wherein the Mossad, under the cover of a moving company, set up operations across from the World Trade Center, and in preparation for the attacks on the World Trade Center, in place, filmed the World Trade Center for hours prior to and during the attacks upon it. Yedioth Ahronoth published an article on September 14, 2001, revealing that the Shabak had prevented Prime Minister Ariel Sharon from traveling to New York on September 11th, where he was due for a planned festival organized by Zionist organizations in support of Israel. And Haaretz revealed that on the same day, quote, the FBI arrested five Israelis 4 hours after the attack on the Twin Towers, filming since early morning from the roof of their company's building, videotaping the disaster, as the FBI report states, while emitting cries of joy and mockery. The Sunday Telegraph in London reported that Israeli intelligence officials had discussed in Washington the attacks on U.S. targets in New York and Washington in August 2001, and Mossad operatives, in conjunction with the CIA and FBI, designated, quote, two target areas. In his interview with Arno de Borsgrave of the United Press International, the head of the Pakistani ISI, which is the CIA-run military intelligence operation in Pakistan that had run the CIA operatives Osama bin Laden and Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. This is what General Gul Hamid told United Press International. It is clear. The plot was by United States Air Force officers. The Twin Towers were attacked at 8:45 a.m. and four flights were diverted from their assigned airspace. The Air Force jets were instructed not to scramble, which would have been standard procedure. I know these operations. This was the Mossad and its U.S. accomplices. The United States spent $40 billion on intelligence control. I know this well. 400 little escapes them. Don't believe that this administration was taken by surprise. Within 10 minutes of the second Twin Tower being hit, CNN announced that Osama bin Laden had done it. Look, I'm in intelligence. You people trained me. This is a typical piece of planned disinformation by the real perpetrators to create an instant mindset. It sets public opinion in a trance that prevents even intelligent people from thinking for themselves. Arno de Borsgrave is in shock. He says to General Gul Hamid, what about bin Laden? Are you serious? We trained him. From a cave inside a mountain? From a peasant's hovel? Please, he does not have the capacity, the technology, the ability for a worldwide operation of this character. Four flights diverted from their assigned airspace, but not one air controller sounding the instant alarm? In Pakistan, if there is no response to an IFF, friend or foe identification, we scramble jets instantly. The aircraft is shot down with no questions asked, and we know that's your standard procedure. We're talking about the Pentagon, interdicted space. We're talking about the White House. This was an inside job, General Gul Hamid, unquote. We detail this, brothers and sisters, in the permanent war, the stakes for working people. There is an intimate, inescapable link between the role of the Israeli state and the events of 9/11 and the category of terror. It is being acted out right before us today with the call for what Barack Obama, the so-called liberal democratic spokesperson who gave the keynote speech in the Democratic National Convention, Barack Obama, has called for a surgical missile strike on Iran. And the brother of John Kerry, Cameron Kerry, in Jerusalem, attacking Bush from the right for not sufficiently supporting the Israeli state and its plans for a direct attack on Barack Obama, Cameron Kerry, John Kerry, George Bush,
Ralph,
one ruling class, brothers and sisters, and the Israeli state at the center of this.
Ralph, fight. Also recently there was a defense appropriation for beefing up the Israeli missile system, and it's a very hefty one. I don't remember the amount right now, but it was particularly to beef up the Israeli defenses against Iran.
Well,
and it's to prepare for an Israeli surgical strike against Iran.
What you're describing, Maya, is the delivery in recent weeks of 5,000 JDAMs and bunker busting.
That's it, Ron. That's exactly.
Bunker busting bombs, which are intended for use in Iran. And I have to reveal to our listeners that about 4 days ago, 5 days ago, we received a telephone call from a documentary filmmaker who I had met in New York shortly after 9/11, and who was in fact making documentary footage of the U.S. Onslaught in Iraq. He called me to tell me that an associate of his was informed by a White House inside source, of plans for an all-out attack on Iran. They were considering doing it just before the November 2nd elections, as an October surprise, either before or after the election. The intention is to not only strike the nuclear reactors that are essentially energy producers in Iran, but to target the locations throughout Iran where the leadership of Iran is situated. And this is completely in keeping with the call both Barack Obama and John Kerry's brother for attacks on Iran. It is permanent war. It is World War IV. It is what Charles Krauthammer, not only for the Israelis but for the administration, had called for in his articles in the Washington Times. It is what John Bolton, who is Under Secretary of State and who has been a key figure of the neocons, has been preparing the public for. It is what the Cheney people are engaged in doing and saying, that the terrorists are going to launch a nuclear an attack on nuclear facilities in the United States, for which there will have to be reprisal. What we're seeing in Gaza, what we're describing about the nature of the Israeli state, is integral to the plans of a system in terminal decay, namely U.S. capitalism, compelled to engage in permanent war, class war, not only against the oppressed and most exploited, but particularly against our own people, with this constant invocation of the category of terror. That, I go into all this, brothers and sisters, not only in relation to our premium, but to ask you to understand this essential role that WPAI and that Pacifica Network plays in allowing such information, such documentation to be brought to you. Also to make clear to you that the Million Worker March mobilization on October 17th, which reached into rank-and-file labor and to the anti-war movement and the social justice movement, is the beginning of a Million Worker Movement, a movement of resistance to that 1% that owns 95% of the wealth and resources of our society. You and we cannot sustain this struggle without the media of communication that we have accessible through WBAI and listener-supported radio.
And let's remind everyone that WBAI is at 99.5 FM in New York and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. The Internet, and particularly the WBAI website, which is prepared by a team, is your access to news and information about what, as well as a direct line to the WBAI schedule and the programming that is going to take place that day and during the week. So please support WBAI. We have prepared a very large array of gifts for you. We want to bring together the work we do around 9/11, the work we do about analysis, and particularly at this moment as Ariel Sharon is moving towards a tremendous onslaught against the Palestinian people, we want to remind you of the significance of understanding the real roots of this and this struggle of the Palestinian people and the stalwart and devoted nature of the people to their struggle. It is their ability to struggle that has prevented the decimation of the Palestinians as an organized people. 212-209-2950. The premiums we have for you are The Hidden History of Zionism and The Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People, and we're going to be hearing more about The Roadmap in this next hour. That's a $100 2-CD set, a signed edition of the cloth edition of The Hidden History of Zionism, signed by Ralph, for $150. The 2-CD set, 9/11 in the Capitalist State and The Smoking Guns of 9/11, $100. And our new hot off the press pamphlet on 9/11 that includes the Who Bombed the World Trade Center 1993, the role of the FBI in that devastating action, the 9/11 false flag operation, the transcript. So many people have asked us for a transcript of the 9/11 false flag program, which is the best synopsis in 1 hour of, it's a very long text, and Permanent War, The Stakes for Working People by Ralph Schoenman, which also leads towards the way forward and analyzes the events of 9/11 of 2001. please get on the phone, 212-209-2950. Michael, I hope you've been able to go back to the pledge room and get some of the contributors that we can read on air and express our thanks to you.
Well,
directly.
As a matter of fact, Maya and Ralph, we do have some now. Would you like to hear some of the thank yous now, or shall we do that afterwards? What would you like to do?
Well, let's do a few now,
okay.
And then we'll go to the next CD, and that'll encourage people
mm-hmm.
to call. We really appreciate all of you, and we hope to get a chance to read many of your thank yous for your contribution on air.
Okay, this is a special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. It is now 8 minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock. Usually on a Tuesday afternoon, you'd be listening to Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton. As soon as the drive is over, we will be back in regular time, and you will be listening to Talk Back. And in fact, at 5 p.m. is the regular time for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. But in any event, I'd like to thank, and Maya and Ralph as well, would like to thank Nathaniel Hamilton from the Bronx for calling in with his pledge for Taking Aim. Aliyah Abdul Karim from Brooklyn, thank you very much for your pledge of support. McKay Johnny from New York City, thank you for your pledge of support. Elaine Jones from Kew Gardens, New York, thank you very much. David Pinkham from Bram Township, New Jersey. You know, Ralph and Maya, New Jersey is always very, very strong in their support of WBAI, and they are your program, your special offering this afternoon. And we thank David and the folks in New Jersey very, very much. Joe P. Mara from West Milford, New Jersey. Thank you very much, Joe. Michael, McHarry from Belmore, New York. Thank you very much. And Rose Lewis from Brooklyn, New York. These are just some of the people who have called in thus far with their pledges of support to WBAI and for Taking Aim. Remember, if you'd like to become a member of WBAI, the entry-level membership rate is $50, $25 if you're a student or a senior citizen. If you can afford the $60, please do avail yourself of the special premium that Taking Aim has put together for you this afternoon. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Use your Visa card, your MasterCard, or American Express. We have something called electronic funds transfer. That's a method of payment where we, upon your direction, are able to extract the amount of money that you allow us to take out of your checking account. So there are many ways that you can go about this, but the main thing is for you to call and become a member, because this is a listener-sponsored radio station, eh? Ralph, Maya, this is a listener-supported radio station. Over 40 years, WBAI has been listener-sponsored and commercial-free, and the reason why we can bring you a program like Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen is because of listener sponsorship, because nowhere else in media, not just in print media, not just on television, not just in radio, but nowhere else in media can we bring you this kind of program if we had commercial or corporate interest. Because we can bring this kind of program to you. Now, everybody, this is not everyone's cup of tea. If it is not for you, then we thank you very much, and please tune into the programs that you do like. But if this interests you, we're asking you to go to your telephones right now, pick up that phone, and make that call. Make the call for someone. As Maya mentioned earlier, take out a gift subscription to WBAI. Get this premium for a gift for a friend or for a colleague, for a library in your community, for some students. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. And I know Ralph and Maya, you're anxious to go back and bring more programming to the listeners, but I just wanted to stop and give a couple of names for
people. Oh, thank you, Michael. You're welcome. Next hour, we'll be thanking more of you. Remember, 212-209-2950, and you can call while we're playing the next extensive excerpt from the two CD set of the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. 212-209-2950. As Michael said so eloquently, this is listener-sponsored. That means it is our radio station. And it is also important to remember that there are no interruptions. Ralph and I couldn't present our shows weekly with interruptions every 6 minutes, 8 minutes for whatever the commercial enterprise happens to be. Ralph?
You cannot have a movement, brothers and sisters, without the sustained information that allows it to arm itself with politics and ideology and data and understanding. You cannot build a resistance, brothers and sisters, without having coverage of that activity, without continuity, between to gain the knowledge on which to act and the organization of that effort in the form of political struggle. At the Million Worker March mobilization on October 17th, we had spokespersons for Black Workers for Justice, the Coalition of Black Trade Unions, the Teamsters National Black Caucus, the Immigrant Rights Organization, the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, the National Education Association and its 2.7 million members, the American Postal Workers Union and its 350,000 members. We were there on behalf of rank-and-file working people across this country, and there were simultaneous actions of solidarity by the two largest trade union federations of Spain, by the largest trade union federation of Venezuela, by the trade union federations of India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, South Korea, 10 demonstrations simultaneously in Japan, in Hong Kong, in the Philippines, brothers and sisters, in London, where the Stop the War movement had mobilized 2 million people. This is an international fight back against the handful of rulers who are imposing upon us permanent war and are constantly preparing false flag operations and indeed new attacks upon the people in the United States itself.
Well, last reminder before we go to the next excerpt, 9/11 false flag operation is one of the prime articles in our new pamphlet, a 50-page pamphlet, our gift to you for your contribution to WBAI of $60. 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11, a two CD set, $100, and the excerpts from what we're playing today, The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People, two CDs, $100, and of course, the ultimate gift, the signed edition of The Hidden History of Zionism, the cloth version, the beautiful edition, $150. And for those of you who can, we're asking please contribute $500 to sustain WBAI. It's a very important moment as we come up to the holidays. These are many, many premiums that you can send as gifts. $500 to sustain WBAI and taking aim. So, Michael, let's go now. This is a part midway through the presentation that I made on the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people, and it deals with many of the plans that the Israelis, the Zionist movement, have presented for breaking up the integrity of the West Bank.
In 1991, Haaretz, in September, discussed the full occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. Quote, the planned doubling of the Israeli population in the West Bank and the settlement program will speed up the strangulation of the Palestinian people in the West Bank. Israel will hold control of the land, the water, the budgeting, and the planning, while 2 million Palestinians will be delegated to closed pockets, what we call in South Africa Bantustans, isolated and cut off from one another, with a low and backward standard of living and blocks of Israeli settlements surrounding them, imposing rigid security, political, and economic control over them. Now, this is Haaretz. It was quite obvious what was going on. And Anthony Kuhn, in a study called Urban Planning in the West Bank in April of 1991, said that, quote, 60% of the West Bank is already appropriated. Already appropriated. Remember, I was saying 40% of the 22% is really all that's been relegated for 9% of historic Palestine. because the Israelis, through their settlement and through military closures, have appropriated the rest of historic Palestine. Virtually all the land is closed and requisitioned, classified as state land or abandoned property. And this is what the Israelis do for the construction of settlements and for the roads that are connecting these settlements, the new road system, which are Jews-only roads. They are specifically Jews-only roads. And they connect the settlements in the West Bank, Gaza, with Jerusalem and with Israel, physically and economically, and as Kuhn says, fragmenting and containing all existing Palestinian communities, essentially creating a prison system for the Palestinians. This is the real roadmap. That is the delineation of this plan to relegate the Palestinian existence to a little Swiss cheese-like cantons that are utterly dominated, controlled, atomized, so that the sense of self-determination can only take place through a security apparatus. And that was first set up with the Palestinian Authority, which was to be a surrogate for the Israeli policing of the population, which had been done through military control prior to the setting up of the Palestinian Authority. And it's a policing of the population that serves one purpose only, and that's the pacification of the Palestinians, arresting the militants, arresting anyone who demonstrates, who has any resistance to the real objective, which is the security of the Zionist state. And that is the purpose of the Palestinian leadership. And that is what is spelled out in the current roadmap, too. And that is the real meaning of the so-called two-state solution. But on the ground, what you have in effect is to make the life so miserable for the Palestinian people so that you have their forced removal. There is no way to earn a living. There is the dispossession of their land. There's terrible insecurity, emotional insecurity, which you can imagine what it's like for the children growing up in that situation. There is no school system. Anyone would say they should leave. And that's what people have done throughout history with emigration from various countries. Most of the people here in the United States emigrated because conditions where they were intolerable. But what you have with the Palestinian people is a thorough tie to the land. They have resisted their transfer, the extermination of them as a people. And most of all, they have resisted the transfer of this population to other lands. And those who have lived in Lebanon and in Jordan and in Syria are conscious of their positions as refugees, where they don't have the right to work. For instance, in Lebanon, they do not get work permits. They must rely upon the United Nations Refugee Organization for their schooling. They do not have health care, and with the destruction of the PLO within Lebanon after 1982, they don't even have clinics and the social fabric to maintain their lives. So, of course, their aspirations will be to return to Palestine, at least so. The position for a democratic and secular Palestine was articulated by the PLO in 1968. And it's part of its charter. It was part of its charter. It was the minimum demand for a movement of national liberation. And it is a demand that we would recognize for ourselves and for any people throughout the world. But throughout the years, people who call themselves promoters of peace have made an exception for Israel, an exception for the Zionist colonial settlers that they would never make for the black population of South Africa or for peoples anywhere in the world. They have always looked for a solution that would preserve the Jewish-only character of the Zionist state. But 20 years ago, the Palestinian misleaders and foremost among them, Khalid al-Hassan, who was a Fatah leader and the right-hand man of Yasser Arafat. He had close ties to the Saudi King Fahd and also to Moroccan King Hassan. And Khalid al-Hassan was the architect of this two-state formula for accepting Israel, and the formula that required the change of the Palestinian Charter, which is what took place in 1991 as the precondition for the Madrid Conference. It's a dead end, and Khalid al-Hassan knew it. And this plan that was developed for two states was developed with none other than C. Vernon Walters. I see you remember who he is. He was the deputy director of the CIA. Now, Khalid al-Hassan didn't have illusions of what the purpose was of the two-state formula, but the Palestinian misleaders wanted some sense of control over any piece of the territory. But he said prior to the first Madrid conference, quote, "This peace conference is not for the Palestinian question. It's to normalize the Arab-Israeli relations, and you need the Palestinians as the icing on their cake. Because the real purpose was to maintain the control of the oil of the Arab East, and with that oil, these country-selling regimes of Saudi King Fahd and the Emir of Kuwait alongside him." So Newsweek on October 28, 1991, said of Madrid, quote, "Baker sets a date for the Middle East conference, but it's too late for a land for peace deal on the West Bank." Here Newsweek understood. The settlement town of Ariel, for instance, which, by the way, is now a city, was recently, according to Newsweek then, a tent village. But by 1991, it had 5 public schools, a college, 32 kindergartens, movie theaters, tennis courts, soccer fields, shopping malls, a 102-room hotel, an industrial park with 75 factories producing everything from electronics to textiles. And it would have grown by tenfold by the year 2000, and it has done that and even more. It is a real city. The deputy mayor of Ariel, Yigal Rosenthal, he pointed from the heights and he said to the Newsweek reporter, quote, "See those empty hills. We will cover them with homes and shops. This is the center of the Israeli state." And at the time, Housing Minister Ariel Sharon declared that he would double the number of West Bank settlers to 2,000 by 1993. And he did. And this was done under Labor, under Likud. It was done during all the time that there were these discussions of so-called peace plans. Madrid, Oslo, Camp David, the Y Accords, the Mitchell Plan, the Tenet Plan. You can count on more than one hand the number of times that they were saying to the Palestinians and to the people of the world, essentially, we are on the road to a peaceful solution. Let's look at the situation on the ground today. Let's look at something such as water, an essential for life. The underground resources such as water, the control of it throughout all these processes, by the way, for the various peace plans, they all require Israeli control of water, the Jews-only highways to be accepted, the grid from the West Bank north to south, east to west, as well as a control of all foreign entry, whether it be of economy, such as goods that were to leave the West Bank in Gaza, or people, you know, to control points of travel from the West Bank and Gaza. At this point, there are 150 Israeli checkpoints, and all of those would remain in place. Yeshafa Harkabi of Hebrew University spelled it out clearly when he said, "Down to a form of limited autonomy that allows the Arabs to decide what they'll have for lunch that day. They can direct such services such as trash collection. Now, this was elaborated in a study by Adam Hanya and Catherine Cook in the Middle East Report that you can see online, and it's called The Roadmap to Oslo, Cul-de-Sac. Because the rings of settlements are following a plan that was developed by General Yigal Alon. I talked before about the Sharon Star plan for the Green Line. But what we have with the dotting of settlements throughout the West Bank dates back to Yigal Alon, the Deputy Prime Minister of the Labor Party, not like Sharon of the Likud, but the Labor Party, the so-called Peace Party. And he was the Deputy Prime Minister after 1967, and he called directly for the annexation of one-third of the West Bank along the Jordan River and the Dead Sea. When we talk about Jenin and we talk about Tulkarm and Kalkia, we're talking about the area of the West Bank in proximity of the Green Line. But Alon, he had bigger ideas. He knew that if you really were going to occupy the West Bank, you not only had to occupy the western part, you had to go right up to the very edge of Jordan. And what we don't see talked about very much are all the Israeli settlements and all the military confiscated land along the Jordan Valley. Not only for the land, but for the important water resource. The diversion of the water from Jordan, and there have been great disputes between Jordan and Israel over that, as well as the diversion of the water in Lebanon, which has almost precipitated a war last year, as the Israelis diverted the water from the Litani. And as we saw in Lebanon, the original plan of the Israelis was to occupy Lebanon up to the Litani, and they did so for many years. And during those years, they built canals and aqueducts to bring that water into Israel. So the second line of settlements are constructed on the highlands overlooking the Jordan Valley. And then we have Jerusalem, again a major point of contention. Jerusalem, the Palestinians consider the capital of a Palestine. At the same time of the Alon plan, rings of settlement have been erected around Jerusalem. 110,000 Palestinians in East Jerusalem have been encircled and unable to reach the West Bank. This is the plan of July 1967. So the roadmap, what we see, is the recapitulation of the prior plans for the liquidation of the Palestinian movement. Well, let's look at the viability. As I mentioned before, the water. Israel uses or diverts 85% of the water that is available on the West Bank, leaving only 15% of water for the Palestinians. And the same is, what does this mean? 5,000 settlers comprise 0.5% of the population of Gaza, but they use 60% of the drinking water. And in the West Bank, the settlers use 600 liters of water a day. The World Health Organization states that the minimum daily standard is 100 liters of water, but the Palestinians only have 70 liters of water. They don't even have the minimum standard of water for survival. There are no Palestinian wells that can be dug because you need a permit. Permits were rare, and since the year 2000, the Israelis refused to give any new permits. 26% of Palestinian cities and towns are not connected to any water systems. 150 villages do not have any water system. They depend on rainfall, springs, and water tankers. So let's go further and look at another situation on the ground. We've seen through the settlements, through the Jews-only roles, through the expropriation of water, through the assassinations, which we haven't discussed tonight, the targeted assassinations, through the actual destruction of places like Jenin, which you were able to see somewhat on TV, because, as you know, the journalists are also targeted so that there will be no transmission of the evidence. And what you'll see as you enter this room, somebody has put up a map of something new that is taking place, but that was actually a plan of Ehud Barak, another so-called man of peace, in the year 2000. And that is an actual physical barrier, sometimes a 30-foot-high solid wall, and at other times electronic fences and trenches that are to go north to south and are cutting off 210,000 Palestinians of the West Bank from the other Palestinians on the West Bank. It's called the Seam Area. And in fact, it is the creation of a Warsaw Ghetto situation encompassing Tulkarm, the town of most resistance in the West Bank, Tulkarm, Kalkia, and also East Jerusalem. So that on the ground, the Zionists are creating a de facto situation for Jerusalem. There is a barrier constructed with checkpoints so that the Palestinians of East Jerusalem or the Palestinians of West Bank to gain access to Jerusalem or to leave Jerusalem must pass through rigorous checkpoints. And not only through these checkpoints, they can only pass through if they have an Israeli security card. Now let's look at the description of this, and then I'm going to close so that we have a lot of time for questions and answers. The engulfing of the 210,000 Palestinians. I mentioned that in some sections it's a 30-foot solid wall. But the main component is an electronic fence with high-tech video cameras and sensor devices, some of them developed in Silicon Valley, so that they can tell if anyone comes near the fence. There's also a service road that borders the fence, and then there's another fence, as if the first wire fence, and then there is a very deep trench, 13 feet deep, so that if a motor vehicle by some chance manages to crash through a wall, the electronic fence, and the barbed wire fence, they can get stuck in the 13-foot-deep trench. Then there are three paths, a trace road with very sand-like material so that any footprints would be visible, a patrol road, and not only the patrol road, but a special road for the armored personnel carriers in order to shoot. This comes to 600 feet. 600 feet wide, north to south, and then zigzagging around in order to encompass all the settlements. As I said, it's a remarkable map, so that you'll see that de facto there is the total occupation of the West Bank. And this map doesn't show what is going on in the Jordan Valley, the squeeze of the Palestinians. This is a stage. The road map. And the Israelis are very clear that the roadmap is but a stage. They expect it to fail. As Alon had said, remember I talked about Alon, Yigal Alon, my plan is based on the understanding that a Palestinian state west of the Jordan River is a failed proposition. Such a state will have no economic viability. It will have no territorial continuity. It will be a destabilizing force that will immediately work to undermine Israel and Jordan. And it will have no international legitimacy. And that's why Alon said, my plan is really based on a that recognizes that Jordan is Palestine. Now, this was borne out recently in an important article in the Jewish Forward. And it's interesting to read the Jewish Forward because, like Haaretz, it is open and revealing of what is actually going on. And on July 11th, the article is entitled, Sharon Mum as Chief Minister Slams the Roadmap in New York Talk. Quote, Prime Minister Sharon has no plans to rebuke his senior minister cabinet member who publicly lambasted President Bush's Middle East policy in New York in a briefing this week, stating that he has the support of a ranking presidential advisor, namely Richard Pearl. The minister, F.E.I. Tom, of the Natural Religious Party, slammed the Middle East roadmap in a high-level talk of the Conference of Presidents of the Major Jewish Organizations. He declared the president's plan was worse than the Oslo Accords, and he told the 30 leaders present, the 30 leaders of the American Zionist organizations, that Israel would never accept any semblance of a Palestinian state. And he said, moreover, that Richard Pearl, the former chairman of the Defense Policy Board, the Pentagon Advisory Board, had supported his position. So what is going on here? Itam told the Jewish leadership that he had a message from Pearl informing him that he was to advance the roadmap and then it would be scuttled. That the plan was to advance it and then scuttle it. And Sharon made no objections. So Yaffe, the man who's the president of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, said, that's a mixed message, an understatement. And Rabbi Amiel Hirsch said, I can't remember any member of the cabinet actually speaking in support of the roadmap. So what we have here is the full acknowledgement by the Zionists and by the cabinet ministers that this is a charade. And if we look clearly in the Israeli press, and I suggest you listen to some of our shows about the issue of transfer, you will see that it is not a fringe movement in the Zionist state. But throughout all the elements, the clear plan is for the transfer of the Palestinian people.
You've been listening to an excerpt of The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. Our gift to you, a two-CD package for your contribution to WBAI for $100. We also have available a signed edition, signed by Ralph Schoenman, of The Hidden History of Zionism, the cloth version, the beautiful with gold imprinting cloth version, $150. As well, we prepared some premiums about 9/11. The continuing offer of 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11, that's a two-CD package for $100, and our new 9/11 pamphlet for $60 contribution. And for those of you who can, at this point, it would really be helpful to sustain WBAI if you could dollars, and we offer you all the four premiums. Now, as I mentioned in this presentation, this is an excerpt of my portion of the presentation, and previously we heard a portion of Ralph's on the history of the plans to eliminate the Palestinian people, the Zionist plans, and we're going to return to that at 5 o'clock. Meanwhile, let's look at what it means for the diversion of 85% of the water, Palestinian water, no opportunity to have the access to what is necessary to sustain life. And again, what is necessary to sustain WBAI is your contribution. 212-209-2950. For those of you who tuned in and are used to hearing Hugh Hamilton, I'm Maya Schoen, and this is
Ralph Schoenman.
And we are on we have Taking AIM with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., and we thank you for tuning in and being with us during the WBAI Fall Fun Drive. For our Taking AIM listeners, this is your only opportunity. We will not be on next week. There's another WBAI special. This is your moment. Come forward to the phone, 212-209-2950. Ralph?
The plans for the subjugation and removal of the Palestinian people and the nature of the Israeli state are inextricably linked to ongoing policy for the fragmentation of each Arab country and the seizure of Arab oil. Indeed, these plans have been pursued by every administration since 1964, and it was set forth very clearly by Robert Tucker on behalf of the Pentagon in an article in which he said, "The oil is like a new El Dorado waiting its conquistador." And that was followed up by Miles Ignoter's Edward Luttwak of the Defense Intelligence Agency, who articulated the view that in order to sell this to the American people, it was necessary to bring in a demon who would have to be stopped. But he said, that demon will not translate the same in Arabic as it does in English. These are the linkages, and this is the inextricable connection between the Israeli state as a cat's paw or forerunner of plans for fragmenting each state in the Arab East. Recently, John Kerry, in his debate with George Bush, declared that he had the support of former heads of the armed forces and of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and of the Army. And he cited specifically John Shalikashvili and General Zinni, the Marine General Zinni, and the Army Chief of Staff, General Eric K. Shinseki. Now, what's interesting about that is that Zinni has stated that it was necessary to have between 400,000 and 500,000 U.S. troops in Iraq and the region to carry out U.S. policy. And the attack on Bush that has been launched here is from the right that they have not provided a sufficient, overwhelming number of U.S. troops to occupy the Arab East, and that they are focused exclusively on Iraq when they should be looking at Iran and even further to North Korea. The Sunday New York Times magazine cover story of September 27, 2002 was entitled The Sunshine Warrior, and it described an important meeting at Fort Leavenworth in that midsummer for U.S. Army's leaders. There was Army Chief of Staff General Eric K. Shinseki. And at that time, he cited the role of Paul Wolfowitz and the neocons, and he revealed a secret assessment of the region that marked Iraq as, quote, a menace to American interests. And Shinseki informed the meeting of the Army and the in his capacity as the Army Chief of Staff that these plans were prepared with Wolfowitz and with Army Intelligence in 1979, a dozen years before advent of Desert Storm. Indeed, he disclosed, and this article reveals, a detailed plan that was prepared by the Israeli Mossad, but called for the fragmentation of each Middle Eastern country in its turn, and this is the report's comment at that time about Iraq. Iraq is first. Rich in oil and internally torn, it is guaranteed as the initial target. Its dissolution is even more important to us than that of Syria. Egypt will then be torn apart like a second Lebanon. The entire Arabian Peninsula will be a natural for dissolution. It is inevitable. And then, and especially, will be Saudi Arabia. Now, these plans were analyzed in late 1978 by the Brookings Institution in a detailed study, U.S. Armed Force as a Political Instrument. And the Defense Department's Advanced Research Projects Agency revealed, quote, 215 times between 1946 and 1975 when U.S. armed forces were used for specific political objectives, setting up all of the events for which 9/11 has provided the post hoc justification. That is the relationship that we've sought to document not only in the hidden history of Zionism, but in 9/11 false flag. And that is the galvanizing data that we ask our listeners to support. That is the kind of relationship of data and information that arms us politically, brothers and sisters, in our judgment, and Beach Radio are indispensable towards the provision of information and analysis and understanding that sustains political mobilization like the Million Worker March and the fight back against these long-standing and pernicious plans.
To remind you, 212-209-2950. We have four premiums for you and a combination of premiums. Think of all the opportunities you have here today, and it's only today. So 212-209-2950 to begin with, as Ralph has been reading from an excerpt from the pamphlet and discussing it, our new 9/11 pamphlet, which includes three important articles. Most importantly, something you haven't seen yet, the transcript of the 9/11 false flag operation. When we rebroadcasted it a few weeks ago, so many people came forward and said, please, we need a transcript. We are offering the transcript along with Permanent War, The Stakes for Working People, and Ralph's significant article on the bombing of the World Trade Center, 1993, an article as important today, as revealing today, as it was when it was first written. These three articles comprise a jam-packed 50-page pamphlet, small print, 50 pages, it would be much larger with the large print, $60 contribution. As well, we have the two CD package, 9/11 and the Capital Estate, and the Smoking Guns of 9/11, and that's $100. And again, back to the Hidden History of Zionism, the signed edition, signed by Ralph, the cloth version of the first edition of Hidden History of Zionism, this classic work that we haven't offered to you for 3 years now. So many of you do not have a signed edition, and that would be $150, our gift to you for your contribution, and the two CD set for $100. That's the Hidden History of Zionism, two proof presentations, and a discussion period. One thing that we discuss in the Hidden History of Zionism, the book, is the prevalence of torture. And when you read this, you get some insight into what has been going on at Abu Ghraib and much that is revealed about the methods of the Zionist state. And one interview that was very painful, there were several interviews, these are all interviews that we conducted, but one particularly was Dr. Osni Shuaibi, who was a dentist and was part of the leadership of the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine. And he was an active member of the El Biri, which is one of the cities on the West Bank. He was a member of the city council and an elected representative at the time for the national leadership of the Palestinians, which was the National Guidance Committee. And Dr. Shuaibi, a man of substance on the West Bank, had been arrested, brutally tortured, and imprisoned seven times. Between 1980 and 1986, he was forbidden to leave the limits of El Biri, and he was confined to his house after 6 p.m. And in 1986, he was imprisoned and eventually deported from the West Bank. Now, you have to remember that someone such as Dr. Shuaibi, who was a member of the city council, was never accused of any armed action or of promoting violence. What was it he had done that had the Israelis had come upon him with such brutal force? He refused to collaborate. He wrote articles about the occupation and the settlements, and he promoted an independent state. Now, Dr. Shuaibi was arrested first at the age of 20, and he was told then, quote, we are watching you. You were first in your class at the university. You can make a very rich and powerful man in the West Bank. You must cooperate with us. And it was upon his refusal that the series of arrests and torture began. And some of the torture, they used heavy batons. They put my legs between chair legs so I couldn't move. They beat the soles of my feet. My feet swelled. After 1 minute, I could no longer feel my legs. They would stand behind me. I couldn't tell if anyone was there, and suddenly the interrogator clapped his hands over my ears with great force. It was sudden, terrible pressure in my nose, my mouth, and ears, a loud ringing that went on for 5 minutes. I lost my balance and hearing. It didn't end there. They used a giant guard to punch me constantly. "You are a dentist? Which hand do you use?" they asked him. "If we break your hand, you will no longer be a dentist." And then he beat my hand until it broke. They tied my hands behind my back, and they suspended me from a hook. They then spread my legs and beat me on the testicles with sticks. They squeezed them. I cannot describe the agony, the stabbing pain all over. You want to faint. And during one of his arrests, it was winter. They put him outside the prison, naked, fully exposed, with his hands cuffed behind him and then suspended from hooks. I was hung this way from 11 p.m. at night until just before sunrise. They then returned me to my cell, put water on the cell floor so I couldn't sleep. Remember, this was not the end of it. Isolate 4.5 feet by 5.5 feet and 9 feet high. In the corner was only a stinking hole. He was left like this. And even that was not enough. He was entombed in a cupboard for 4 days and nights, squeezed into a bent position where he couldn't stand. It was only 20 inches high and it was 20 by 20. He could not stand, and even that was not enough for the Zionists. A filthy sack was tied over his head so he couldn't breathe. This is one of the harrowing descriptions, it goes on, of the prevalence of torture by the Zionist state that we documented in our report for the United Nations, documentation that continues to this day in cases throughout the West Bank and, as we see, by the U.S. military forces in Iraq at this very moment. The Hidden History of Zionism, a signed edition by Ralph Schoenman, $150 contribution, 2-CD set, $100, and 9/11 packages, the 9/11 in the capitalist state, and the smoking guns of 9/11, $100 for that joint offering, and our new pamphlet on 9/11 with the three important articles, including for the first time ever a transcript of 9/11 false flag operation, and that's for your $60 membership. Please call 212-209-2950. First a word from Ralph, and then some more thank yous.
Dr. Osmi Shuaibi, as Maya has been describing, when he was released after sustained torture, went to the Palestinian camps in Lebanon, the siege at that time, including the largest camp in Lebanon, Ain el-Helweg, which means Sweet Spring. Indeed, not only was the torture sustained for all those who had been resisting or even existing as independent Palestinian figures, but what was done in the Palestinian camps of Lebanon during the occupation of 1982 are amply described by us in the Hidden History of Zionism, as in our book Prisoners of Israel and our report for the United Nations. The condition is not only one of individuals whose cases we elucidate. It is a generalized condition of the Palestinian people for 100 years under siege. It is rather reminiscent of the fate of the Native Americans at the hands of settlers in North America. And that informs every aspect of U.S. policy in the Arab East, where the Israeli state and its permanent war on the Palestinian people is an instrument for the subjugation of all of the peoples of the region, attacking their attempts to resist, undermining their efforts of nationhood, seeking to prevent any kind of cohesive political movement to challenge U.S. imperialism. We have to keep in mind, brothers and sisters, that in 1958 in Iraq, there was a revolution that confined. The results of that revolution were that the new government that came into power under the nationalist leadership of Abdul Karim Qasim confined the U.S. oil companies to 0.1% of the territory of Iraq. And that's what precipitated the CIA plans to assassinate Abdul Karim Qasem. And as we've documented and as our book lays out, this was carried out by a CIA agent named Saddam Hussein, their man in Baghdad for 27. That is the continuity, and that is the meaning, I have to tell you, of the ongoing dialogue between Bush and Kerry about how best to expand and sustain U.S. military control of the region and to beef up and to intensify the so-called war on terror. It's interesting, brothers and sisters, that when the plans were being advertised openly for an attack on Iran, the so-called missile attack on Iran, both by the Israelis and with U.S. support, the advocates of the Democratic Party, Kerry and, as I mentioned, Barack Obama, publicly called for just that, as if they could take credit for it in advance, as if they could mute the political impact of a Bush surprise attack on Iran by calling for it themselves. That is a measure, that is an indicator of how this election is an exercise in duplicity. As the American poet Ezra Pound once put it, the technique of infamy is to invent two lies and get people arguing heatedly over which one of them is true. Listen carefully to Barack Obama in the Chicago Tribune, October 1st. The keynote speaker of the Democratic National Convention, hailed as the rising star in the Democratic Party. Quote, "The big question is going to be if Iran is resistant to economic sanctions, which we must impose, at what point do we take military action?" And he answers his own question, says the Chicago Tribune. "As I watch how this is evolving, I would be surprised if Iran blinks at this point." And he states, "What we have to do is take military action now." What are we describing here? The call for the spokespersons of the Democratic Party for the same policy of permanent war, subjugation, which requires trillions of it, and war on the American people in the form of assaults upon our social services, our living standards, our jobs, our national health care, which is absent, housing. That is what we are engaged in resisting and exposing. That is the role of taking aim. And that is the importance of Free Speech Radio and of WBAI, brothers and sisters. And that is the content of this, of the premiums that you get, the documentation of this planned assault upon the peoples of the world, the documentation of the relationship between the nature of the Israeli state and the pursuit of imperial policy in the Arab East, the documentation of the meaning of the fake war on terror and the role of U.S. intelligence agencies instigating these events, which form the basis and the pretext for U.S. policy long prepared in advance. The fake pretext for the war in Iraq is exactly analogous to the fake pretext of the 9/11 attacks as the rationale for this ongoing policy. Contribute, support this radio programming, and please contribute to obtain the premiums which arm you with the evidence and the analysis and prepare us for the resistance which is inevitable, no less than the Palestinian resistance, no less than the national resistance in Iraq. Must there be such a resistance, political in its character and overwhelming in its nature, in the United States itself? I want to point out something, brothers and sisters. It has been disclosed, as I mentioned, that 1% of our population owns more than 95% of the rest of the population combined. This is a disparity of wealth greater than that which existed in France at the time of the French Revolution. This is a concentration of power and of economic control greater than that which obtained in China on the eve of the Chinese Revolution. This is overwhelmingly greater, a concentration of wealth in the hands of the rapacious few, than obtained in 1776 at the time of the American Revolution. You get my meaning, brothers and sisters? This is a system incapable of meeting the elementary needs of our people. We must build that resistance movement that has informed every oppressed people over recorded history. That is our task, too. And we need the information vehicle. We need WBAI. We need Free Speech Radio to sustain the struggles that are inevitable and necessary as we proceed in time with a system in permanent and terminal decay.
If you've just tuned in to the regularly scheduled programming for Taking Aim, you've recognize Ralph Schoenman, and I'm Maya Schoen. Here today, October 26th, for the WBAI Fund Drive. We've been on for 2 hours now. This is our last hour, and it is your last opportunity to contribute to WBAI in support of Taking AIM, and most importantly, WBAI, your radio station. We've prepared four premiums for gifts to you for your contribution to WBAI. The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. It's a two-CD set, $100 contribution. The special signed edition of the cloth version, the cloth hardback edition of The Hidden History of Zionism for $150. That's signed by Ralph Schoenman. This is the classic work on the struggle of the Palestinian people and the nature of the Zionist state. And for those of you who want information about 9/11, we have the two CD set of 9/11 in the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11 for $100, and a new pamphlet, 9/11, which includes three articles, most importantly, the 9/11 False Flag Operation, the Permanent War, Stakes for Working People, which goes into in great detail the analysis of what it means, what the events of 9/11 mean for us today, and who bombed the World Trade Center 1993, particularly the evidence of the role of the FBI. And as Richard Bernstein of the New York Times has written, he claimed that 1993 was really set the stage for the 9/11 2001. And if you understood 1993, you understood 2001. Little did he know that Ralph had uncovered so much information about 1993 that whatever the bourgeois press was putting forward as the events of 9/11 was not what they appeared to be. It was a false flag operation. So that's the pamphlet for $60. We are going to play again in this hour a further excerpt from Ralph's presentation of the Hidden History of Zionism, two CD set for $100. But Michael has gone back to the pledge room, and we want to announce on the air and thank you personally, those few of you who have called in with contributions over the past 2 hours. Michael?
Right. Thank you very much, Maya, and thank you, Ralph. It is now 5 minutes past the hour of 5 o'clock. We have 50 minutes because we have to make way for the evening news at 6 o'clock, and right before that at 5:55, we have some statements from candidates that are running for the local station board. So we only have few minutes left before we conclude this afternoon. Now is the time for you to go to your telephones and make your calls, make your pledges of support for Taking AIM with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Make your pledge to WBAI 212-209-2950. We're in the middle of the FM dial. We are here because you want us to be here. You have supported us with your financial contributions over the years. Now, I know some of this is difficult for some of you. If that is the case, then fine. You know what I'm saying? You're grown. You're an individual, an adult. Take from this what you think is necessary, and if it is more than you are willing to accept, then that's fine as well. But the fact, what's interesting to me and what I support, is the fact that the station is here, that we can produce and bring you this information unfettered, uncluttered, without commercial and without corporate interference. People like Walter from West Babylon, New York. Thank you very much, Walter. Tamer from Ridgewood, New York. Thank you very much, Tamer from Ridgewood. Eleanor J. Brennan from Little Falls, New Jersey. Thank you very much. Lori Adams from Brooklyn, New York. Thank you very much. James Shea from Montgomery, New York. Thank you very much. Arlene Darwin Hemingway from Amityville, New York. Thank you very much. Jeffrey J. Ellenberger from Manhattan, New York. Now, those are just a couple of names, a few names who have called. Several more people have called. They don't want their names mentioned on the air, and we respect that. Right now, we have seven calls coming in right now at 212-209-2950. You can use your Visa card, your MasterCard, or American Express. The electronic funds transfer method of payment is available as well. You can send a check or money order. Do wait for that invoice to come. It'll come in a base, and then you can send your check or money order to us here at WBAI. But if you have that credit card, it expedites matters for us. So please make your calls now, 212-209-2950, 60 degrees at 508. This is the regular audience for Taking Aim with Ralph Shumman and Maya Shum. The telephones are picking up right now. Ralph and Maya, I'm going to kick it back to you because I know there's more information that you want to share with the audience, but the phones are ringing right now. Those people are calling throughout the Manhattan, New Jersey, and Connecticut area, parts of Pennsylvania. We broadcast 60 miles in all direction of our transmitter atop the Empire State Building. Thank you very much for your calls of support. Please support the idea and the concept of listener sponsorship. That's what you're doing. You are saying, listen, I want more information than can come out of a six-minute, as Maya said, a six-minute excerpt. We're playing large chunks of this presentation without any kind of interference. We have to come to the listenership several times a year to sustain us so that we can continue this broadcast, broadcasting the array of voices that are here on WBAI. It's not just Ralph and Maya. You hear so many voices in the overnight. You hear so many voices on the weekends, early in the mornings, in the midday. We're asking you to support WBAI 99.5, right in the middle of the FM dial. My name is Michael G. Hastings. I am only the board operator, the radio guide in the afternoon. I shuttle individuals in and out, give you the time, and tell you what's coming up next. And I'm so happy to be here with all of the programmers, be it Gary Null, be it Armand DeMille, be it Hugh Hamilton, be it Ralph and Maya, Michi Henwood, all of the people that I work with during the day and programs who I announce throughout the evening, Fred Hershkowitz and many, many others. 212-209-2950. Make your calls now. Support Taking Aim with Ralph Shoneman and Maya Shum.
Thank you, Michael. 212-209-2950. We're going to go to an excerpt, first a word from Ralph, but I want to remind you that the 2-CD set of The Hidden History of Zionism and The Roadmap is a Dead End for the Palestinian People. We have the signed edition of the cloth, that's the hardbound version of The Hidden History of Zionism. Get them while you can. $150 contribution. We don't have very many copies of The Hidden History of Zionism left. 9/11 and the Capitalist State and the Smoking Guns of 9/11, a 2-CD set, $100. And lastly, our new 9/11 pamphlet for your contribution of $60. Those of you who can afford it, please, and this is the moment, give $500. Help WBAI really get on the road for this end of the year. Ralph.
You know, I mentioned, Maya, that the recent study called Trends in Wealth Ownership disclosed that 1% of the U.S. population now owns more than 5%, 95% of the population combined. The current issue of Forbes magazine confirms that the combined net worth of the top 400 surpassed $1 trillion in 12 months, and the number of billionaires in that list has grown from 79 to 313 in 2004. And this is the underlying structure of power that explains the subjugation of Palestine and the 9/11 events itself, because as we will document and as our books and as our pamphlets and the CDs we are offering establish, is the necessary design of a handful of people who have control over the state and the economy and who are under siege. So when we talk about information that arms people, and yes, of course, it is diversity on the air that allows our audience to grow, but it is also the concentration of reality and information that is otherwise not available that prepares people to allow the shades to fall from their eyes, the mask to be removed from those who make decisions in our society in our name, so that we are capable of organizing and of building a fight back.
And with that introduction, we go to another excerpt from The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People.
So indeed, Zionism has as its particular feature the task and the project of eliminating the Palestinian people from history, removing their organized existence, pursuing them in whatever location to which they have fled. The inhabitants of the Galilee, of Jalil, who were driven out, settled in the refugee camps in Lebanon. For the first 15 years, they were not allowed to build permanent structures. Only after that time were they allowed to use cinder block. The largest of these camps in Ain el-Helways, outside of Saida. You may remember in 1982, with the third war to seize and control Lebanon, it was launched in the name of peace in the Galilee. Cruel irony. For the actual inhabitants of the Galilee were in the refugee camps in Lebanon. And indeed, in Ain el-Helway, they had organized their communities on the basis of the villages from which they had been driven out. Some 85,000 people in Ain el-Helway. Ain el-Helway was taken as a grid. It was bombed statically, quadrant by quadrant, for 10 days and 10 nights, unrelenting. At the end of the bombardment from the air, it was shelled by artillery from the sea. At the end of this artillery bombardment, and Maya and I were living in Ain el-Helway, the Zionist militia and the Zionist army came with its bulldozers. They leveled everything. They bulldozed over the shelters in which people were sheltering and were buried thus alive, with family members clinging to the bulldozers to prevent the occurrence. What would be replicated in Jenin and throughout the West Bank was the precise modality through which all of Palestine was emptied of its population. That is the legacy, that is the nature, that is the character of the Zionist state, that is the means through which the removal of the population was accomplished, that is the objective of the state when it declares itself as an exclusively Jewish state. Judaizing the land means removing the Palestinian people from history. And all that has unfolded in the West Bank and Gaza is but the little continuation of the process through which all of Palestine was colonized. Indeed, what of the relationship which I began to discuss of Zionism to the Jews? Herzl. The Jewish people is a very bad people, its neighbors hated and rightly so. Its only salvation lies in the colonization of the land. Hashemir Hatzer. A Jew is a caricature of a normal, natural human being, both physically and spiritually. As an individual in society, he revolts and throws off the harness of social obligation. He knows no order, no discipline. Herzl. I have achieved the free attitude towards anti-Semitism, which I not only understand historically, but pardon. I recognize the emptiness and futility of attempting to combat anti-Semitism. And to Count von Plevin, with the following proposition, quote, help me to reach the land, and we will end the revolt against Tsarist rule. We shall remove for you these anarcho-Bolshevik subversive Jews. Von Plevy. We will finance the Zionist movement. Your Jews, however, are joining the revolutionary parties. We support your Zionist movement. You don't have to justify this movement to me. It is consonant with our own. You are preaching to a convert. The Zionist Federation of Germany. Its memorandum of support to the Nazi Party on June 21st, 1933. A rebirth of national life such as occurring in German life will also take place in the Jewish national group. On the foundation of the new National Socialist State, which has established the principle of race, we wish our community to fit in the total structure so that for us too, in the sphere assigned to us, we shall work fruitfully for the fatherland. Indeed, the Jewish organizations and the Jewish leaders throughout Europe at the time of the rise to power of Adolf Hitler, which occurred at the time of the Great Depression when marks were being carried around in wheelbarrows, attempted to organize a boycott of Nazi goods and Nazi production. That boycott was broken by the World Zionist Congress, which set up the Havara to market Nazi goods throughout the Middle East and Northern Europe. From the inception, the Zionists were in collusion. In 1937, the Labor Socialist Zionist Militia, the Haganah, sent 5 Opolkas to Berlin to offer their services to the SS security services. Adolf Eichmann was invited to Palestine as the guest of the Haganah. 5 Opolkas, the Eichmann. Jewish nationalist circles are very pleased with the radical German policy, since the strength of the Jewish population in Palestine will be so far increased that in the foreseeable future we can reckon upon numerical superiority and domination over the Arabs. Ben-Gurion, to a meeting of labor Zionists in Great Britain in 1938, "If I knew that it were possible to save all the children in Germany by bringing them out, but only a handful by transporting them as colonists to Eretz Israel, we opt for the second alternative." Errol Katznelson, editor of the labor Zionist Davar, describing, quote, "the cruel criteria of Zionism," unquote. "These German Jews are too old to bear children in Palestine. They are not Zionists. We need colonists, trained armed colonists, supported by the regimes themselves." As late as 1943, while the Jews of Europe were being exterminated in their millions, the United States Congress proposed to set up a commission to study the problem. Rabbi Stephen Weiss, the principal spokesperson for Zionism, went to Washington to testify against any rescue bill, any reduction in quotas, any allowance of immigration to the United States, to Great Britain, to Canada, to Australia, because it will divert attention from our colonization of Palestine. Yitzhak Grunbaum, the chairperson of the Zionist Committee set up to investigate the condition of European Jews. "When they come to us with a plan to rescue the masses of Jews in Europe or the redemption of the land, without a second thought, we support the redemption." Of more said about the slaughter of these people in Europe, the greater the minimization of our attempts to promote the Hebraization of the land. If there were the possibility of today of buying arms with the money of the Karen HaSayed, the United Jewish Appeal, and send it to Palestine, as opposed to sending aid to the Jews of Europe, would we do the latter? No, and once again, no. In July 1944, the Slovakian Jewish leader, Rabbi Dov Michael Weiss-Mandel, in a letter to Zionist officials charged with, quote, rescue organizations, he had provided them with exact mapping of the railways and appealed for the bombing of the tracks on which the Hungarian Jews were being transported to the crematoria. He appealed for the bombing of the furnaces at Auschwitz, for the parachuting of ammunition to 80,000 prisoners, for the parachuting of saboteurs to blow up the means of annihilation, to end the cremation of what he described as 130,000 Jews a day. Weiss-Mandel was not alone. Throughout the 30s and 40s, Jewish spokespersons in Europe cried out for help, for public campaigns, for organized resistance, for demonstrations to force the hand of the Allied governments. They were met not merely by Zionist silence, but by active Zionist sabotage. Here is the Creed de Coeur of Rabbi Weiss-Mandel, writing to the Zionists in July 1944. "Why have you done nothing until now? Who is guilty of this frightful betrayal? Are you not guilty, you who have the greatest good fortune in the world, your liberty? We send you this special message to inform you that yesterday the Germans began the deportation of Jews from Hungary. The deported go to Auschwitz to be put to death by cyanide gas. Here is the schedule of Auschwitz from yesterday to the end. 12,000 Jews, men, infants, healthy and sick, are to be suffocated daily. And you, our Zionist brothers, you ministers of all the kingdoms, how you keep silent in the face of this great murder. Silent you are, while thousands upon thousands, reaching now to 6 million, are murdered, and silent now, while tens of thousands are being murdered and waiting to be murdered. Their destroyed hearts cry out to you for help as they bewail your cruelty. brutal you are and murderous too you are, because of the cold-bloodedness of the silence in which you watch, because you sit with folded arms and do nothing. Although you could stop and delay the murder of these Jews at this very hour, you, sons of Israel, are you insane? Don't you know the hell around us? For whom are you using this money, you murderers, you madmen? Who is it gives charity? You who toss a few pennies from your safe homes while you conspire against us, or we who give our blood in the depths of hell? The Holocaust? The culmination of Zionist betrayal was the sacrifice of Hungary's Jews in a series of agreements between the Zionist movement and Nazi Germany, which first became known in 1953. Dr. Rudolf Kastner of the Jewish Agency Committee in Budapest, under the directions of Ben-Gurion, signed a secret pact of Adolf Eichmann to, quote, settle the Jewish question in Hungary. This took place in 1944, and the pact sealed the fate of 800,000 Jews. Kastner was under the direction of the Zionist leaders when he made his agreement with Eichmann, and the quid pro quo was 600 prominent Zionist leaders who were to be transported out. When a survivor, Machiel Greenwald, exposed the pact and denounced Kastner as a collaborator whose, quote, deeds in Budapest undermined the lives of hundreds of thousands of Jews, he was sued by the Israeli government. And even the Israeli Supreme Court came to the conclusion the sacrifice of Hungarian Jews in order to secure the prominence was the basic element of the agreement between Kastner and the Nazis. They fixed the division of the nation into a small fragment of prominent Zionist leaders, and on the other hand, the great majority of Hungarian Jews designated for death. The Zionist collaborators kept secret the plans of extermination, betrayed the leaders of the resistance, colluded in the transportation vehicles themselves, participated fully in the entire process of deportation. That is the record of the relation of Zionism to the Jews, Zionism's perfidy. The betrayal of the victims of the Holocaust is but the culmination of their attempt to identify the interests of the Jews of Europe with those of the established order. They made their pact with the most retrograde and imperial regimes of the day. And indeed, the most remarkable declaration of all can be found in Vladimir Jabotinsky's final work, The Jewish War Front. He wrote of his plans for the Palestinian people. Since we have now obtained this moral authority for calmly envisaging the exodus of Palestinians, we need not regard their forced departure of 900,000 with dismay. Herr Hitler has been enhancing the popularity of population transfer. This remarkable declaration in the Jewish War Front synthesizes Zionist thought and its moral bankruptcy. The slaughter of the Jewish moral authority, for what? For calmly envisaging the exodus of Palestinians. The lesson of Nazi destruction of the Jews was that it was permissible now for the Zionists to visit the same fate upon the entire Palestinian population, and 7 years later the Zionists emulated the Nazi genocide whose backing they sought and achieved, and they covered bleeding Palestine in a multiple of liturgies, driving 850,000 people into exile. That is the legacy, that is the reality, that is the character of the Zionist state, that is the meaning of the policies in the West Bank and Gaza, that is the logic of Jenin, that is the meaning of the wall, that is why the Wehrmacht plan, the literal Wehrmacht plan for the Warsaw Ghetto, is the model studied by the Israeli Armed Forces commanders not only for the construction of the wall in the West Bank today, but it was the Wehrmacht plan for the destruction of the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto which served as the model for the destruction of Jenin, of Nablus, and the old quarter, the thousand-year-old old quarter of Nablus that was leveled to the ground. It is the model, indeed, for Sabra and Shatila. It was the model for the mass graves that would be found all over Lebanon. The mass grave in Ain El Helwe, in Rashadia, in Al Bas, in Burj Al Barajni. After the Israeli occupation in Lebanon, the mass graves in Ain El Helwe were such that the body fluids surfaced to the ground and formed a small river. And the International Committee of the Red Cross building was in the path of this river of body fluids, of graves of the massacred. So they moved their building so as not to be in the path of the rivulets of body fluids of the massacred of Ain El Helwe. And you will find nary a report in the International Committee of the Red Cross of the systematic massacre of the Palestinian population, the refugee population, the victim population, the population, the survivors of the massacres of 1948 to 1955 in Palestine. Let us understand the basic elements of the construction of the State of Israel. Between 1948 and 1953, 370 Jewish towns and settlements were established. 350 were on so-called absentee property. By 1954, 45% of Israel's Jews lived on property confiscated from absentees. 250,000 new immigrants settled in urban areas from which Palestinians had been expelled through massacre. Entire cities had been emptied of their population. Jaffa, Acre, Lida, Ramla, Bisan, Majdal. The plunder embraced 385 towns and villages in their entireties and large sections of 94 other cities and towns, containing 35% of all buildings in Israel. 10,000 business and retail stores were handed over to settlers. From 1948 to 1953, the period of greatest immigration, the economic importance to Israel of seized Arab property was decisive. The amount of cultivatable land seized from Palestinians driven from the country by massacre was 3.5 times the total area of the land granted the Zionists with the end of the mandate. All citrus groves of Palestine were seized. 450,000 dunams, 2.5 million boxes of citrus from seized Arab groves were in Israeli hands, 20% of the country's hard currency profits. By 1952, 95% of Israel's olive groves from seized Palestinian lands. Olive produce from stolen Palestinian groves represented the third largest export after citrus and diamonds. One-third of all stone production from 52 seized Palestinian quarries. Now, you know the mythology, Zionist industry, Zionist dedication, Zionist skill, transformed an otherwise barren desert neglected by its primitive nomadic Arab inhabitants only recently descended from the trees. They made the desert bloom. Yes. Palestinian orchards, Palestinian industry, Palestinian rolling stock factories, houses and possessions pillared after slaughtering conquest. Because this ship of state is a vessel of pirates, and its proper flag is a skull and crossbones. The Israeli state is a state based on plunder, based on dispossession, based on ethnic cleansing, based upon massacre. It is predicated upon laws that deny the Palestinians the right to subsist, to work, to live, to utilize the land. They are a people perpetually under siege. They are marked for expulsion. They are marked for removal from one end of Palestine to the next. Some 70 years ago, an orator responded not to the occupation of his country or the liquidation of three-fourths of its towns and villages. He was not reacting to massacre and mass imprisonment and detention camps and torture. He did not decry the land and property of an entire people in their overnight transformation into pauperized refugees existing in tent camps, hunted and persecuted wherever they fled. He did not denounce a 60-year ordeal punctuated by unrelenting bombing and invasion and yet further dispersal. he responded in but a few weeks of sporadic bombing, as he declaimed memorably, "I have nothing to offer you but blood, tears, and sweat. You ask, what is our policy? I say it is to wage war by sea, by land, and air, with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark, lamentable catalogue of human crime. That is our policy. You ask, what is our aim? I say in one word, victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory, however long and hard the road may be. For without victory for us, there is no survival. Let that be realized. No survival. I feel sure that our cause will not be subject to failure, and I feel entitled to claim the aid of all." And a week later, he declared, "We shall defend this place, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We'll fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields. We shall fight in the streets. We shall fight house to house. We will fight in the hills to which we retreat. We shall never surrender. And even if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island is subjugated and starving, we shall yet carry on the struggle." Now, what is it that makes it possible for the leader of the Raj, the Imperial Raj, Winston Churchill, to utter these surrenders them illicit for the Palestinian people? Only that inveterate racism, that imperial consciousness that denies to a victim people, the world's soldiers for justice, the right to defend their survival, to defend their existence, to fight for their land, to fight for their self-determination, to fight for their survival. The Palestinian people are engaged in a struggle which is at the center of the resistance to imperialism. They are linked inextricably to the struggle of the oppressed masses of the Arab East. As the great Palestinian poet Hassan Kanafani, assassinated by the assassination squads of the Zionists, as have been so many of the Palestinian leaders over the decades, Hassan said, "The path to the liberation of Palestine passes through Mecca and Riyadh and Baghdad and Damascus and Kuwait and Cairo and Alexandria." Yes, the struggle of the Palestinian people is a struggle for the liberation of an oppressed populace, of an oppressed region. For Zionism is but the continued instrument of a colonial presence, an imperial presence that we see unfolding before our eyes in Iraq and targeting Iran and targeting Syria and targeting but 80 more countries. It is a struggle that speaks to all of us, and we cannot deny to the Palestinian people that elementary right to resist that we reserve for ourselves, because our own oppression and the subjugation that our rulers would impose upon us is in tandem with their visiting upon the people of Palestine and the Arab East their imperial designs, of which the Zionist colonial state is but a locus operandus, the means of enforcement, the inexorable capitalism and imperialism and of a ruling class in our lives. And that is our obligation and our struggle, to speak truth to power and to stand with the Palestinian people in their resistance and their struggle for survival.
Thank you.
You are listening to Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. I must tell you, this programming that you have been listening to for the past few minutes has been absolutely riveting, so much so that I had to go into the back to help answer phones because the phones were ringing off the hook. Things have calmed down a little bit now, and I've had to come back into the control room with Ralph and Maya. Ralph and Maya, are you with us?
Yes, Michael. I want to remind people we have 4 premiums. We have only a few minutes left for your opportunity to acquire one of these important. You're going to want to share with your friends, your family, and your colleagues, and we assure you, you will have them in time for the holiday season. The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People, an excerpt of which you've heard now. Earlier today, we played another excerpt of Ralph's presentation and an excerpt of mine, but this is the closing moments, the riveting moments, as Michael said. $100 2-CD set. The Hidden History of Zionism, a signed by Ralph edition of the cloth version of the book. Limited edition, $150. 9/11 in the Capitalist State, The Smoking Guns of 9/11, 2-CD set, $100. And our new 9/11 pamphlet that includes the full transcript of 9/11 false flag operation, as well as an article on the 1993 bombing, as Ralph clearly points out the role of the FBI in that operation, and Permanent War, The Stakes of Working People. Before we, and that is a $60 contribution to WBAI. Before we go on, I'm going to put Ralph on. I want to remind you that Lynn Stewart is right now testifying in court all this week in her defense. This is the trial of the moment. It is a trial that affects each and every one of us because it pertains to the right of legal counsel. Lynn Stewart, please go check out her website for all the details of how to get to the courtroom. Pack the courtroom this week. It sends a message to the judge and the jury that the world is watching, that we care about the struggle and the fight and the resistance of Lynn Stewart. www.lynnestewart.org, and that's Stewart, and it's at U.S. District Court, 40 Foley Square, room 110. All out this week. When you're not listening to WBAI, be in court to show that you support Lynn Stewart and that you support WBAI. This is the moment for your premiums. We won't be on again during the fund drive, so now is the moment. Get to 212-209-2950. What you heard, you can only hear by contributing to WBAI. Ralph.
I'm very glad you mentioned Lynn Stewart, Maya, not only because Lynn is a heroic figure who is now under siege and under trial, facing 30 years imprisonment for what? For defending the blind Egyptian cleric who has been the patsy and the falsely accused author of the attack on the World Trade Center in 1993. And amongst the premiums that we are offering is a documentation, as Maya mentioned, the article that I'd prepared in 1993 at the time, that shows the hand of the United States, and particularly the FBI, and indeed that of the Mossad. Because, brothers and sisters, Imad Ali Salem was an Egyptian intelligence agent and a long-standing and operative of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Under FBI direction, Imad Ali Salem approached the mosque of the blind Egyptian cleric, one in Brooklyn and one in New Jersey, and he recruited young men to come to meetings where he proposed to them provocations of the following kind: blowing up the Lincoln and Holland tunnels, the Statue of Liberty, and the George Washington Bridge. And indeed, Imad Ali Salem organized the meetings and supplied the wherewithal for the bombing of the World Trade Center. And at every one of these meetings, he wore a wire, and he made transcripts of each of these discussions, which were deposited in the offices of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in New York. For 6 months prior to the bombing of the World Trade Center, the FBI had 50 boxes of the manuscripts and documentation of their own provocateur agent who had proposed and who was funded by the FBI for this provocation of a bombing of the World Trade Center. It was later established that the person who secured the rental van and organized the apartment where the preparations occurred was the Mossad operative Guzi Hadass. Indeed, Imad al-Islam would complain, and it was reported in the New York Times, that he had been assured by the FBI that fake explosives would be supplied for a government operation. The hands of the FBI and the Mossad were all over the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, brothers and sisters. The lawyer who was defending the blind Egyptian cleric, Sheikh Rahman, Lynn Stewart, is in turn under attack by the United States authorities for having the audacity to offer a defense, the content of which exposes the role of the U.S. government in these false flag operations, of which 9/11 is the continuation. That's what's at stake in the trial of Lynn Stewart. And that's what you're receiving in the premium, the documentation, permanent war, the stakes for working people. Who bombed the World Trade Center, U.S. World Trade Center in 1993, evidence points to the role of the FBI. That's what the premiums offer you. Lynn Stewart's trial is ongoing as we speak. That's the relevance of free speech radio. That's the importance of taking aim, brothers and sisters. That's the significance of keeping WBAI on the air. That's what this is about. Information, exposure, analysis, and resistance embodied in the person of Lynn Stewart, no less than in the heroic Palestinian people whose plight and whose extraordinary generational resistance the hidden history of Zionism documents and celebrates. Please, brothers and sisters, continue to support Free Speech Radio, Taking Aim, and WBAI. Call in your support. Call in your premium. Continue to provide the financial means through which information and Free Speech Radio and the programming of Taking Aim can be sustained.
212-209-2950. WBAI depends upon a great deal of volunteer labor, such as most of the programmers and volunteers in the pledge room, volunteers in all aspects of its operation. But you cannot run a 24/7, 24 hours, 7 days a week operation on just volunteer efforts. It doesn't take air. As every one of us knows, when we go to the supermarket, when we go to the doctor, when we take care of our children or our companion animals, it takes funding. Every month, the electric bill must be paid. Every month, the core staff needs to be paid, and healthcare needs to be, health coverage needs to be paid. All these rising costs, the rent on the facilities of WBAI, the tower, the letters that go out to you, all these costs need to be paid. 212-209-2950. And the only sustenance for WBAI comes from each and every one of us. We are self-supporting, and these gifts to you we have prepared so that we can show our appreciation. If you have the means, please, $500 for WBAI to keep programming Taking Aim. We are the only place on the dial where you're going to find Taking Aim. The only place in the country where week after week you will find Taking Aim.
It's boom time for billionaires, brothers and sisters, reported Knight Ridder on October 3rd, describing how billionaires are the central financial contributors to both the Democratic and Republican parties and their respective candidates. The Wall Street Journal identified the names of 200 billionaires, financiers, and corporate executives who are supporting actively the candidacy of who? Of John Kerry, no less than of George Bush. Speaking before the Detroit Economic Club, John Kerry stated that his administration would ensure lower taxes for corporations and a growth in the private sector. He presented his chief economic advisors Warren Buffett, the billionaire who guided California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lee Iacocca, who crafted the Bush economic agenda for the 2000 campaign, David Bonderman, founding partner of Texas Pacific Group, whose fortune derived from the bankruptcies of Continental Airlines and American West, and is engaged in a leveraged buyout of Enron, the lead supporter of George W. Bush as governor, Bonderman, who guided the Bush presidential campaign of 2000, now being presented by Kerry. Kerry presented as well Osley Brown of Brown Foreman, quote, a registered Republican all my life. We are looking for the leadership that Senator Kerry will bring in fiscal matters. Central to this financial team was the Bank of America Chairman Charles Gifford, August A. Bush IV, President of Anheuser-Busch, Peter Chairman, the second-in-command of Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation. On and on, brothers and sisters. And that is the importance of what we are seeking to provide our listeners with, in understanding that the captains of capital have captured the political process and confine our knowledge to those who are our oppressors and who have a strategic consensus on what they need to do. Expand the war in the Middle East, increase the so-called war on terror, cut the social services. Kerry wants to eliminate 2 million public sector jobs as his answer to the deficit. Keep up the military spending, they say, both Bush and Kerry, but cut the social services. Information, analysis, documentation, political resistance, WBAI and Taking Aim are central to that. Please, brothers and sisters, sustain the Million Worker Movement. Sustain the free speech radio that arms it. Call in your contribution and get your premiums now.
Ralph, Kerry has the billionaires, but we have people who are more important. We have the WBAI listeners. And we want to thank all of you who each week support Taking Aim and who are coming forward today to support the programming of Taking Aim and particularly WBAI, which makes it possible for us to be with you. 212-209-2950. I want to remind you again, anyone out there who can afford $500, all four of these premium are our gift to you, and the biggest gift, it's for you to know that you are a major sustainer of WBAI. The Hidden History of Zionism, special 2-CD presentation, which really elaborates and explains and gives you the best understanding of what is unfolding now, day by day, in Palestine. The Hidden History of Zionism, the signed, limited, special edition, signed by Ralph, inscribed, $150. 9/11 in the capital state and the smoking guns of 9/11. 2-CD package, $100. And our new, hot off the press, no one has, first people who will have it. It includes 3 articles on 9/11, Permanent War, The Stakes for Working People, the full transcript of 9/11 False Flag Operation, and Who Bombed the World Trade Center 1993, as relevant then as it is today to explain what is taking place. And that individually is a $60 contribution to WBAI. Remember, 212-209-2950. We won't be with you again until the fund drive is over. So please, this is your only opportunity to contribute during Taking Aim. We know you Taking Aim listeners are loyal and devoted to our programming as much as we are devoted to bringing it to you each week. Now, we know this is your moment. This is the time for your contribution, 212-209-2950. We're all doing our part to bring the incredible station, keep it on the air, and keep it viable.
Maya, on October 10th, the New York Times reported, quote, both candidates plans to handle the deficit fall short. Kerry plans to save $156 billion by eliminating 2 million government jobs. On October 11th, the Wall Street Journal reported, corporate tax measure nears passage in Senate. A sweeping bill supported by both parties provides $100 billion in new relief for U.S. manufacturers. On October 8th, the New York Times published this following article, Working for a Pittance. It contains a report by the Ann C. Casey Ford and Rocker Foundations. Quote, 9.2 million working families in the United States, one out of every four, earn wages so low they are barely able to survive. It shows that this is a much vaster problem than most people imagine. There are 20 million children in the... The Food First fact sheet entitled Hunger, a Growing Epidemic in the United States confirms that one out of four children in the United States go hungry. The San Francisco Chronicle reported on September 29th One in four Bay Area families cannot afford the basics of housing, food, health, and child care. Food First cites 40 million people in hunger, but defines poverty as $17,463 for a family of four. That's $4,366 a person. The clear conclusion is that the number of actual families in poverty in America is at least four times higher than the official figures, because obviously no one can survive on $4,300 a year in the United States. Brothers and sisters, this is the reality.
Ralph,
this is the real importance of keeping Free Speech Radio on the air, that this information and this understanding about what these politicians are really about can be made available to us, because it's up to us. It's up to the rank and file. It's up to the listeners of Free Speech Radio to build that movement that provides the real alternative, a political expression for working people in the United States, and not forever to be confined to the parties of the bosses. They have two parties, brothers and sisters, the bosses, and we need one of our own. And we need the information that allows us to build the struggle to accomplish that. And we need the Free Speech Radio and the programming of WBAI. Keep the message alive.
Ralph and Maya, we're just about out of time. Would you like to give folks a contact number, how they may be in touch with you in the future, please?
Yes, our telephone number is 707-552-9995. And leave a message and we'll get back to you. Our website is www.takingaim.info. And thanks again to Mark Bilk and Pamela Summers for maintaining their... Our email address is takingaim@pacbell.net or takingaim@wbai.org.
And when you think Taking Aim, think the Million Worker Movement, the Million Worker March. The website is www.millionworkermarch.org. This is an ongoing struggle. Taking Aim is central to it. Million Worker March was sponsored by WBAI, as it was by KPFA in California. They're all bound together in this fight back, brothers and sisters. Keep the fight back alive.
Thank you very much, Ralph Shoneman and Maya Shone. This has been a special presentation of Taking Aim. With